Hundreds of Afghan security personnel and refugees continued to flee across the border into neighboring Iran and Tajikistan. That is not slowing down either, even though, as I pointed out last week, you had Tajikistan. There's so much of an exodus of troops, Afghan troops, into Tajikistan that they put 20,000 of their troops on the border. After a week ago, last Monday, you had 1,000 Afghan troops run across the border, a very dangerous situation for these other countries as well. On Friday, the Pentagon's reaction to the Taliban's claim of 85% of territory taken strongly suggests that the Taliban might not be exaggerating at all, writes Zero Hedge. And here is the quote. Asked about how much territory the Taliban held, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby declined direct comment. But he said this, quote, claiming territory or claiming ground doesn't mean you can sustain that or keep it over time. Yeah, that's true of the American military, isn't it? See, we won. Mission accomplished. Remember that? George W. Bush, mission accomplished. Well, claiming territory, claiming that you've gained ground doesn't mean that you can keep it, right? Your colonial aspirations. You want to talk about that? Imagine, if you will, that we had a group of Marxist revolutionaries that were focused on trying to destroy our culture and civilization and everything else because they wanted to tell us that everything that we did was imperial and colonial and so forth 200 years ago. But they completely ignore. Have you heard any of these Antifa Marxist people? Have you heard any of them complaining about what's going on in Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria or go down the list, Yemen, any of these places, right? Have you heard them complain about that? No, completely silent about what's really going on with empires. What's going on with the Chinese empire as well. So he said this was CNN. He went on to say, and so I think it's really time for the Afghan forces to get into the field. Come on, guys. You got to get out of Kabul. I know you're there at the embassy hoping the helicopter is going to take you out, but you got to get out there in the field. And we've even got some poppy fields that need to be guarded out there that, you know, we've been guarding for the last 20 years to get most of the world's supply coming out of that area. So get out in the field, guard the poppy fields, engage these people. So he says they got to get in the field, and they are in the field, to defend their country, their people, their drug lords. Yeah. Isn't it interesting, you know, when we look at all of this, and you think about the war on drugs. I've talked about it from the constitutional perspective continually. I do not support the use of drugs. I think they're harmful. I think they're insidious, recreational drugs especially. But I don't want to see the entire judicial system, legal system, law enforcement, prison system that we have built up around this prohibition war. But think of this from the perspective of the vaccines. We've had since 1971, 50 years ago, for 50 years, we've had the war on drugs to protect people from taking drugs that they foolishly wanted to harm themselves with. And now we are going to provide the drugs and demand that you take drugs that we know are dangerous, life-threatening, paralyzing, and we're going to demand that. And so after spending all of this money to try to keep what we said were harmful drugs, and you know, these vaccines are a lot more harmful than marijuana. We do have some harmful strains of marijuana that are the product of prohibition. Whenever you prohibit something, whether it is alcohol or marijuana, recreational drugs, or, by the way, if you prohibit firearms, you'll wind up with a lot more dangerous forms of whatever it is that you're prohibiting, because that's the way the black market works. But we do have some dangerous strains of marijuana that are out there that have surfaced because of prohibition. But when you compare marijuana to these vaccines and you think about the untold expense and harm that we have done to people to stop marijuana, and now we're pushing this out, isn't it strange? You know, I've always called it the war of drugs, because in Afghanistan, we're controlling the poppy fields and growing 90 to 95% of the raw material for opioids worldwide right there under our auspices. We had the crack cocaine was a product of the American government to fund their secret wars unleashed in American cities, just like the opioid epidemic was. We've had wars of drugs on the American people for the last 50 years. And now we've taken this in a different direction, haven't we? Thanks to President Trump. Miami mayor is leading a call for U.S. intervention in Cuba. Oh, history repeats itself. But the interesting thing about this is not what the Miami mayor has to say, but what the Cuban people have to say. They're rioting in the streets. And they're rioting in the streets not so much against communism. Communism has made the lockdown even worse. But these people are out there because they're upset about the lockdown. And I'm not supporting the Cuban government in any way, shape, or form. I'm just pointing out that over this last year, it's pretty much impossible to tell the Trump administration from the Cuban government, the communists that are there. Now, the Fox News will point out that Bernie Sanders has been silent about Cuban pro-freedom uprising. But again, these people are not rebelling against communism per se. They're rebelling against the authoritarian measures that have been put in for COVID. They've had it. And what we're seeing is across the world, it doesn't matter if you are supposedly a conservative nationalist president like President Trump, or if you're a communist like these Cubans, or if you're somebody like Justin Trudeau, or if you are the conservative premier of Alberta. It doesn't matter. Even within Canada, you know, you've got the liberal areas, you've got the conservative areas. Conservative areas have been even more draconian than the liberal ones in Canada, locking up pastors and so forth. The politics, if you haven't noticed, don't really matter with this globalist agenda, do they? Everyone must be locked down. It doesn't matter that we've shown that the lockdowns don't work. You can compare areas within the same country, different states within America. You can compare country to country, and you can see that lockdowns are totally ineffective, and yet they are rigidly adhered to this point, to this very day. And it's now escalating again in Australia and other places. The politics don't matter as much as the lockdown. And so in Cuba, thousands of Cubans took to the streets from Havana to Santiago Sunday, rarely seen protests expressing frustration over pandemic restrictions. Police initially trailed behind as protesters chanted freedom, we've had enough, and unite. One motorcyclist pulled out a U.S. flag, but it was snatched from him by others. We're fed up with the queues, with the shortages. That's why I'm here, said one middle-aged protester. He declined to identify himself for fear of being arrested later. Now, I will say that everything that has been done to us is the type of thing that communists have suffered with, right? Centralized control, demand, deciding which businesses and industries and activities are essential, putting limits on travel. All of this, all of these things are hallmarks of communism, of Marxism. The shutting down of churches, all of this. And this globalist agenda is a neo-Marxist agenda. But let me say that this is this kind of Marxism that has been imposed on us by Trump, continued by Biden. This kind of Marxism is above and beyond what people in Cuba have been tolerating. They won't even tolerate this in Cuba. This kind of Marxism brought to you by your conservative, nationalist, anti-globalist President Trump. It's too much for the people in Cuba. We have, however, thankfully, we have a lot of billionaires who are going to save us and make everything fine for us, right? A good example of this is Richard Branson, who just went to space. And I went hysterical laughing when I saw what he actually had. It's not a space rocket, right? What he did was he reenacted the early pre-space flights of the X-15. Do you remember that? I remember it because I had a toy X-15, so I remember that really well. 1961. And you had what essentially was the same thing that Branson has just done with his vehicle. They would fly this kind of rocket-shaped device that had minimal fins on it, wings on it, and they would release it from the bottom of a plane, and then it would turn on the burners, and take it up the rest of the way. So they carried it right up to the edge as far as they could with the plane, so they didn't have to launch off of the ground. And they had them already going pretty fast clip and then released it. And the X-15 would go up above, just above the mark at which they start counting outer space, which is 50 miles high. And it had more than 13 flights that went more than 50 miles high. As a matter of fact, some of them went 67 miles high. This flight went 50 miles high, just to get right to the edge of space and technically be there for a couple of minutes. What an accomplishment. Isn't it amazing what a billionaire can accomplish? He can replicate what the American space system did 60 years ago. Quite an achievement there for Richard Branson, I must say. Maybe the next thing he's going to do is to create his own version of the Corvair. I'm sure it'll be operated by batteries, okay, so it'll be all different. But it's not even that much of an accomplishment, as you might expect, because he got more than $200 million in taxpayer money to open up his facility in New Mexico, beginning back in May of 2019. Isn't this interesting? Typical billionaires. You know, they are born on third base, or if they're not born on third base, they have the taxpayers put them on third base, and then they claim they hit a home run. Now, $200 million is chump change compared to the kinds of subsidies that Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos have gotten out of the federal government. But this is out of the local government. And it was about 8 years ago that I did a lot of reports about the NFL at that time. And the massive amounts of money, of course, their orders of magnitude higher now. I mean, we were talking at the time of a few $100 million for stadiums to be built for billionaire owners of sports teams. And now it's up into the billions for these stadiums as the price tags keep going up. So we build the stadiums for them, and then we pack in and we cheer the team of millionaire players who are playing a child's sport. And we give hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to these billionaires so they can launch themselves into space and into the record books, having replicated what was done 60 years ago. And then President Trump takes credit for this, of course, as he always would. It's not the taxpayers that get any credit. We don't get the credit. No, no, it's President Trump took the credit for it because he said he allowed them to do that. Yeah, he came up with the idea that it should all be privatized. It's not the taxpayers who pay the bills for their spaceships, for their stadiums, for their battery factories, for all of this stuff. No. We don't get any credit for that. It's these wonderful billion. I don't know what we would do without billionaires like Branson and Trump and Musk and Bezos. What would we do? I mean, we wouldn't be able to get anything done, would we? If we didn't have a billionaire in Washington to save us, boy, we'd be in big trouble, wouldn't we? Sure, I'm glad we had Trump there for 4 years. Always taking the credit. Yeah, he said, as Trump put it, he says, I made it possible for them to do this. A lot of rich guys love space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they love money. I think they love having people look to them. And they're going for the high ground financially. He said, so I said, look, if Elon wants to stand up a rocket, let him do it. We'll charge him some rent. Let him do it. Let these guys do it, said Trump. And so we're going to let Elon put up more than 20,000 satellites and beam 5G back at us because, you know, we couldn't get any of this done if we didn't give money like that to these billionaires. It's so great that we have them because we wouldn't know what to do with our lives if they didn't enslave us as tax slaves and then beam 5G radiation back at us so they can spy on everything we do. I'm so grateful to Trump and Elon Musk. These guys are geniuses. Yeah, they truly are. I guess they are a lot smarter than we are if they can get away with this stuff. You have an interesting article on Zero Hedge by Tim Kirby, Strategic Culture Foundation. And he's talking about the Visegrad nations. And he talks about, and of course, the Visegrad nations are the former Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, these conservative European countries, formerly under the communists. They don't like communism, and they have they don't like the new religion that is being pushed on everybody. And everything in this article is really being pushed from really kind of a religious perspective, because he gets it. I've said this many times. The LGBT agenda is a religious agenda. It is a religion. They're very dogmatic about it. They fiercely worship their gods, and they demand that you do as well. It is a religion. It is one of the most intolerant religions that we have ever seen. And he begins it this way. He says, the Visegrad nations have nailed their complaints to the EU's door, referencing Martin Luther and the Reformation, where he nailed his complaints to the door. When we look at his point being, and I pointed this out last week, that as Viktor Orban in Hungary said, we are not going to allow this kind of LGBT propaganda to come after children. He says, I don't really care what you do, 18 years and up. He says, I believe you'll answer to God, but we'll leave that to God. That is not the concern of government. But you will not do any of this stuff to children under 18. And when that happened, as I reported last week, the EU was furious. Angela Merkel in Germany, but especially the president or prime minister or whatever, the Grand Poobah of Denmark, whatever his title is, he wanted them thrown out, and still does. And so this article is about that religious divide, and it is a religious divide. This is not a culture war. This is a spiritual war. And if we don't understand the nature of this, we're not going to win it either. In the heartland of the EU itself, the Hungarians, under the full weight of Brussels' bureaucratic yoke and decades of Hollywood influence, have passed a set of laws similar to those in Russia about banning LGBT propaganda. The Hungarians, under Orban, are now spreading a heresy against the core values of the EU. Think about that. That is a core value. This is a core value of the Biden administration. It's a core value of the EU. It is a core value of globalism. The entire LGBT, Sodom and Gomorrah issue is a core value of these organizations, these globalist organizations. Why? Because to destroy a society, you must destroy the family. A society is made up of families. A strong society is made up of strong families. And again, because it is a spiritual war that these people are engaged in. All these people say, well, who is behind this? Is it Mossad? Is it the CIA? Who is behind this? It's Satan. It's Satan who is behind this. This is a spiritual agenda. It goes from generation to generation. These people that are at the top right now, whether it's Bill Gates or whether it is Klaus Schwab, they're just temporary placeholders. They'll be replaced with somebody just like them. That is why the same agenda continues from generation to generation, because it is a spiritual agenda. Since the end of World War II, writes Strategic Culture Foundation, since the end of World War II, conservatives have utterly failed on all fronts to counter the changes to society that have happened. There's really only been a liberal agenda at high speed versus a slower incremental liberal agenda that is slowed down by the human road bumps that are the modern right. Rather than simply resisting the inevitable rise of gay marriage and adoption, Hungary is actually for the first time actively pushing in the opposite direction, which could be that Martin Luther or that Rosa Parks movement. And see, this is what is necessary, and this is why I have always bristled at the label conservative. I do not want to preserve the status quo. I don't like the status quo. I haven't liked the status quo for decades. I want to go back to something better. I want to go back to the status quo ante. It's not good enough to stay where we are and yet no further. And yet that is the position, typically, of conservatives. They just want to stay where we are. And a simple example of that is minimum wage. If you talk about minimum wage, conservatives will say they will not oppose it in principle, but they will oppose changing it and raising it, right? They don't want to remove it and have a free market, which is really no more of an intellectually honest position than the parity position to say, well, if you think that minimum wage is going to make everybody rich, why stop at $15 an hour? Go to $50 an hour. Go to $1,500 an hour and we'll all be rich. Well, you understand that's not going to work. You understand that if you raise wages to that level, what you do is you create inflation, you create unemployment. And that is true when you go in and artificially raise the minimum wage in the first place, at any level. But the conservatives will never push back at the principle itself. They'll just say, all right, this far and no further. That gives us a ratcheting effect as the Marxists move things forward to their agenda. The conservatives will say, okay, you want that, but no more, no more. That's it, right? You're not going to do it again. And then they do it again. Rather than simply resisting the inevitable rise of this, they're pushing back again. The silent majority clearly sees that it is wrong to destroy the idea of gender and the family for the sake of the feelings of a tiny percent of the population and the cradle-to-grave propaganda that has failed to change this in the former Warsaw Pact nations. The absolute majority of humanity does not want to go to the back of the bus anymore for the ability of drag queens to dance upon the centuries of culture and struggle that got humanity to where it is today. Well, and again, this is not simply about protecting our culture or even our country. This is, again, when we look at this as a spiritual war, and we will not win this fight unless we see it that way. Because if we're going to use the tools of political parties, if we're going to use the tools of presidents and prime ministers and elections to try to fix this, we will lose. Because the weapons that we have as Christians are mighty. These other weapons are puny. And if you don't understand that, look at the last 60 years of history to see that. How long are we going to try the same tactics and same approaches of politics to try to wage spiritual war? Czech President Miloš Zeman has come out vocally and openly to support the legislation made by his neighbors. While joyously smiling, he told CNN that if he were younger, he would get trains and buses full of heterosexuals to come to Prague in order to show how absurd the LGBT are. That is a very blasphemous thing for an EU leader to say, writes this leader. He says they're very dogmatic, the EU officials. It's been shock and horror as they see what Hungary is doing, with calls to excommunicate Hungary. The EU bureaucracy has also called this law and similar Polish maneuvers grotesque. Yeah, it's laws to protect children from predators, drag queens, who are sexually grooming them. And there was an even more vile picture that came out of the UK over the weekend. I don't know if you saw it. Some guy dressed up in a rainbow-colored furry suit as a trans monkey, and he had a sexual device hanging down between his legs for children, okay? For children. How much longer will the West allow this kind of stuff? People in Hungary, Poland, the Czech Republic are rightfully disgusted with this. We may be disgusted, but we are ashamed to say anything about it. Because if we do, we know what the punishment is. But the Hungarians are not concerned about this. They're going to protect their kids from this sexual grooming. We cannot ignore that for the Western elites, LGBT is a core, inarguable dogma. It is something that the EU takes deadly serious. It is a core element of their agenda. And it's not just the European Union. It's America, it's all the Western countries, it's Canada, other places like that. Every corporation, every embassy, every school, every advertisement over the last 10 years has become increasingly rainbow-ridden. The LGBT movement is vastly louder in its promotion from the West than we ever saw promotion for capitalism or for democracy, even during the Cold War. Think about that. If you don't understand this is a war, think about that. Think about how we didn't have this level of propaganda and support for any of these values that we say the West stands for, even during the Cold War, that we do for this LGBT agenda. Standing up against this movement in the West is essentially career suicide. The article does not use the terms heresy and blasphemy and dogma to be cute. This really is the drama at play. A zealous and extreme hatred of the family and traditional gender roles has zero tolerance of any thoughts or actions to the contrary. Okay, so now at this point, Tim Kirby with the Strategic Culture Foundation kind of war games it. So what's going to happen as you have Hungary and Poland and the Czech Republic say we're going to defend our kids against this Sodom and Gomorrah agenda? And the EU says, well, you do that and we're going to kick you out. He says, well, the EU could, first of all, just wait this out. And they could wait for another couple of generations. And probably with another couple of generations and with all the media from Hollywood, as they get more and more drawn into that seductive disinformation system that we call Hollywood entertainment, that over the next couple of generations, they will wind up to be as submissive and as self-loathing as Germans and Americans. Poland, and to an extent, the rest of the Visegrad group, he says, is traditionally terrified of Russia. Thus, given the choice of being cut loose from the EU or going gay, there is a strong chance that Warsaw could side with even the most satanic and self-destructive EU model rather than bow to Moscow. And then on the other side, he says it's essential if the Visegrad group is going to hang in there with anything that they have to hang together as a group. Individually, even these nations are nothing. And that's why we have to hang together collectively, or we'll hang together separately. And so he is saying, and it is true, that as a bloc, they have something. And their traditionalist efforts need to be coordinated in order to be effective. And he says, any system of apologetics or argumentation for traditional families in the 21st century will become more finalized soon and will be the greatest weapon for everyone on the wrong side of the Berlin Wall. And again, what is the apologetic going to be? Is it going to be that we just, it was always better when I was a kid. I just, liked the John Wayne movies. All that stuff was great. We just need to bring that back. Well, I'm all for that kind of stuff, right? I'm a traditionalist kind of guy. America was kindler and gentler, even if it was George H.W. Bush that said that. But that isn't what made it that way. I mean, we're looking at the result of it. Because that society came out of the hearts of Americans who lived in that society at that time. There has to be a reformation. And that is something that is going to come from God through our prayers. It's not something that we're going to fake. As I've mentioned before, you can have you can make everything look nice. If you want an apple tree, you can go out to just any ordinary tree and you can hang a bunch of apples on it, but that doesn't make it an apple tree. There's going to have to be a fundamental change, and that means that we are going to have to recognize the tools and the sources of this propaganda as it's coming from media, especially from Hollywood. And we have to, first of all, shut off that flow of sewage into our lives, into our living rooms, into our minds, into our hearts, and especially into the hearts and minds of our children. We have to recognize what it is at this point. Isn't it recognizable at this point? Is there any question about it? What this is about? It has moved so rapidly. How could anybody miss this at this point? I don't think anybody is missing it. I just think they don't have the courage or the determination to do anything about it. Trump and DeSantis, as we saw over the weekend at CPAC, were leading the poll. They had two polls, one with Trump in it, one without Trump in it. The one that had Trump in it, he got 70% of the vote at CPAC. DeSantis came in at second place with 21%. Then in the second poll, they said a poll without Trump in case he doesn't run. And in that particular one, it was DeSantis who got 70%, actually got 68%. And then you had a whole slew of people that got 1%. Rand Paul, Nikki Haley, Ted Cruz, Tucker Carlson, who's not going to run, Kristi Noem, and Pompeo all got 1% in the poll that included Trump. Perhaps they got a little bit better. Yeah, they did when Trump was gone.
I want to remind everybody these
you had, I don't know what that was, but we'll continue on. and in the governor's races, we see that there is a flood of pro-Trump candidates, even though over the weekend we had Alan West, the GOP chairman. And I don't know everything about Alan West. I've seen some very provocative statements that he's made that I 100% agree with. Things like, you know, we could secede if we wanted to. I like Alan West. He is a guy who, whether you agree with him on all the policies or not, and again, I don't know everything that the guy said, but I do know that he has the courage of his convictions, and he's not afraid to say what he thinks. And that's something right there. And it was something actually that I liked about President Trump at the beginning. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he'd be good, but I'm always willing to give somebody who has the courage of their convictions and will not be shamed into silence a chance. But when you look at what is happening, as they point out, these governor races and the pro-Trump candidates, you already see alliances being made. So even though Alan West is running against globalist sellout Greg Abbott here, Greg Abbott already has the inside track, because Greg Abbott has gotten the endorsement of President Trump. Yeah, the guy who put mask mandates on us for the better part of a year. That's just the kind of guy that Donald Trump loves. The guy that's pushed vaccines. The guy that's done a shell game with you, saying, yeah, we'll protect you from vaccine passport, but not really. We're not going to do anything to stop the hospital in Houston. You know, we had all of that. Remember that? Greg Abbott took credit for stopping vaccine requirements, and yet you had Houston Medical, hundreds of doctors are suing them. They don't want to take it. They've lost in court. Greg Abbott's not doing anything to protect their rights. Didn't do anything to stop the mandate there. Even though a hospital does a lot of business with the state of Texas, and that was one of the things they were saying, was that, you know, if there are businesses that were doing a lot of business with the state of Texas, they would stop that. That situation in Houston shows what a total fraud, liar, and deceiver Greg Abbott is. And it's no wonder that he and Trump are buddy buddies. They're two of a kind. Two of a kind. And then this other Republican who is getting a lot of help from Trump, the absolute worst Republican governor during this lockdown, Mike DeWine of Ohio. Facing a challenge, he has now aligned himself very closely with President Trump. He even has Brad Parscale as an advisor. Well, that's the good news, because with Brad Parscale, he has definitely painted himself into a corner. So perhaps this statist, mandating governor DeWine, he was the first one to come up with $1 million lotteries, if you recall. And like some of these other Republican governors, like Brad Little in Idaho, he has locked people down as much, if not worse, than some of the Democrat governors. Yeah, you've got the Democrat governors in California and New York and Illinois there, and Whitmer in Michigan. But some of these other Democrat governors are not as bad as DeWine and Brad Little and what they have done. And yet, President Trump is going to support him. Why? Because President Trump always supported the lockdown. He always, and still does, support the toxic genetic code injection. He funded it. He's proud of it. He still brags about it. Kristi Noem at CPAC criticized GOP governors who enacted COVID-19 mandates and accused them of rewriting their history. And CNN is very upset about that, but that's exactly right. That's exactly what they have done. Kristi Noem is 100% right on this. She said, we got Republican governors across this country pretending that they didn't shut down their states, that they didn't close their regions, that they didn't mandate masks like Greg Abbott and DeWine, supported by Trump. She says, well, I'm not trying to pick any fights with Republican governors. All I'm saying is that we need to have leaders with grit. And they didn't. They caved. We need to have leaders not just with grit. We need to have leaders who, because you can have people who can be very obstinate in terms of standing up for their political interests, right? You know, somebody, a recent occupant of the White House, a lot of grit when it comes to his personal life, his personal political career, his anything that affects him or his family. He's got a lot of grit. But when it comes to our lives and our liberty and the Constitution, he's a pushover. He's a no spine whatsoever. So he goes on to say, well, it's a fact that in South Dakota, I never ordered a single business to close. And that's true. Good for her. South Dakota, she said, did not do any of those things. We didn't mandate anything. No masks, nothing. We trusted our people, and it told them that personal responsibility was the best answer, that they could make their own choices about that. She was greeted with a standing ovation at CPAC just hours before Trump was slated to speak on Sunday. She's been defined in part by her intense loyalty to Trump after a year in which she campaigned aggressively to help re-elect him. She said, I think he'd been fantastic. He gets up every day and he fights for this country. Well, no, Christie, he didn't. He funded these Republican governors who locked us down and the Democrat governors who locked us down. He incentivized that. He gave them massive amounts of money. Brad Little in Idaho got several times what the entire state budget was in terms of a bonus for his own personal discretionary rewarding of friends and enemies as long as he kept the pandemic going. As long as he locked things down, they were financially incentivized to do that by Trump. He was not fighting for this country. He stood by passively while Fauci destroyed this country. Now, what Trump has is he's passive aggressive. He will talk but do nothing. He will backbite and stab in the back, but he will do nothing. He is a globalist wearing GOP badges, and this is why I continue to talk about him, because he is still worshipped by Republicans. It's absolutely amazing to me. The CPAC Republicans. Just think, it was a year ago when CPAC met that you had one person who tested positive, was not sick, and the liberals were rejoicing. Oh, look at this. We have all the Republicans from around the country came here, and now they're all going to die. They all rubbed shoulders with these individuals, and they all started scurrying off and self-isolating, all these Republican senators and others. And so they were like, they're all going to die, and this is going to be great. We're just the irony of this, that this virus is going to take out the entire conservative movement, and nothing happened. And yet the Republicans, for the rest of the year, cowered down as if this was what the liberals were saying it was. They're afraid to have the RNC convention, the nominating convention. They stopped having political rallies. You had governors who locked down the state and put masks on our faces. Didn't they learn anything at CPAC last year? Well, evidently not. And then Kristi Noem, even though she stood up for those ideas, and even though she is and again, everybody is afraid of public opinion. It's just like the media, right? Trump equals audience and approval, which equals money, which equals winning elections. And so everybody falls in line behind the Pied Piper. Because otherwise you're going to wind up doing a broadcast in your living room if you do even that. Noem says, it was tough to be attacked by my friends in conservative media over the trans athlete bill. And that's where she caved. The gender gaslighting of kindergartners is even worse. And this is the other problem that I have with the Republican Party. They look at this and they only see the LGBT agenda as it affects sports competitions for women. And it's like, come on, there's a much bigger issue here. That's what the Hungarians understand. They understand that it is targeting and sexual grooming of children starting in kindergarten. And yet the Republicans can't even present a unified front to fight the takeover of sports by men who dress up as women. She said, the bill I gave my legislature and asked them to sign because I did not veto a women's sports bill. I asked them to fix it, and they chose not to. She's spinning this. She's absolutely lying about that. Going postal. How the left will use vote by mail to federalize elections. And this is from the American Conservative. And I'm glad that they realize this. As a matter of fact, I was saying that last year, the mail-in election was because we were locked down. And when the USPS, the U.S. Postal System, came out in August of last year and said, we are patenting a blockchain way of handling elections, I said, they're going to lock in this mail-in election. They've locked us down and said, now you're going to have to vote by mail. And then they're going to lock this in with the blockchain stuff. And that's exactly what is happening. And then, of course, you had, you know, Mr. CIA. I know he didn't work for the CIA. He worked for the military side of intelligence. I just call all the intelligence community the CIA. So Mr. CIA, Steve Pachinik, grabs that and throws that into the mix as if blockchain was going to somehow be our savior, pushing the idea of blockchain for the elections. We do not want to have electronic elections, folks. You can just forget about it. Look at, they go through a laundry list here, the American Conservative, of all the things that are wrong with our elections. It's not one or two electronic voting machine companies. There's a lot of things wrong, systematically wrong. These things would be encoded into law if the Democrats pass the For the People Act, as they call it, H.R. 1. This is what it would encode into law. The Democrats' vision for federalizing U.S. elections from the top down. So you get rid of voter ID. You'd force every state to adopt automatic and same-day voter registration. You'd have voting rights for felons, no excuse absentee balloting, mandatory early voting, taxpayer funding for political campaigns. And if that weren't enough, it would violate free speech rights by forcibly disclosing nonprofit donors and imposing state legislatures with redistricting committees for every state committee to make them accountable. And so to redistrict the lines, that's it. You're done. Redistricting allows you to pick the voters and the voters that are going to keep you in office. That's what every party, when it's in political power, has done since the beginning of America. And it, I saw it done for the longest time, and I've given the illustration many times before. I'll just do it very quickly here. What happened in North Carolina, 2008, it went for Barack Obama. Had always been Democrat since Reconstruction. And then in 2010, there was voters' remorse, and you had Republicans won every single office in North Carolina except for Congress. Nothing changed on the congressional seats. Why? Because of the districting. But for the first time since Reconstruction, you had Republicans in control of the legislature, and that was 2010 was the year that every 10 years they can redraw the districts after they do a census. And so it was Republicans for the first time had the ability to redraw the districting lines. And so guess what? The next election in 2012 was a big change in the House of Representatives, but that was not going to change with the districting lines that had already been put in. That just underscores how important that is. They pick the voters. And then, of course, since the Democrats lost, they started all kinds of legal actions and said, well, this is horrible. We can't have gerrymandering. And it's like, we've always had it before. You just don't like the fact that you lost with it. But all of these measures that I mentioned here are just part and parcel of what is going to happen, and the post office was already positioning itself to do this under Trump. And Trump, again, reinforced this because he went with the lockdown. And I said at the time that there's no reason to even bother to show up to vote if you're going to have a lockdown election. It's going to be so incredibly dishonest. And this is why I have absolutely no interest in litigating any of this stuff at this point at all. You should have done something about it before the election. And between that election and the runoff election in Georgia, I said the Republicans, if they had any sense, they would be focusing, first of all, on making sure that they were going to reform the way the election is being held in Georgia, or they're going to lose both of those seats, and they subsequently lost both of those seats. But these problems with the elections go far beyond this. It even goes back to the point as to who gets to be on the ballot and who gets to be in the debates. And if you're going to control something that fundamental, and that is even more fundamental than controlling our speech on social media. But with those things, those are even more important, or equally important, I should say. I mean, if you've got a system where nobody counts the votes and therefore the votes don't count, right, or they can rig the count, that is tremendous. But you have to have fair and open elections, which means that you have to have free speech, which means that you have to have not only free speech on social media, but free speech in the debates, and you have to have free access to the ballots. And that's what both the Republican and Democrat Party have worked against for decades. So when you look at this, it is an absolute nightmare. And so when we look at things like CPAC, and we look at these politicians who flip and flop from one side to the other on these issues, who completely betrayed us over the last year, you have to say, does it even matter if we're going to leave these same election rules in, if we're going to continue to move further and further into electronic voting? Now you've got a lot of jurisdictions where they're doing ranked preferences, which again is fine if it's done in a transparent way, and that is voted by hand. If you're going to have a preferential ranking of candidates where the computer is going to algorithmically go in and the first time through, until somebody crosses the 50% mark, you'll take off the lowest candidate, and then you will take the people who voted for that candidate, and you'll redistribute their second choice to everybody else, and on until you get somebody past the 50% mark. That could be a way to get rid of this lesser of two evils. If you opened up the ballot, and if you opened up the debates, and if you opened up our free speech, and if you had a preferential ballot thing, all of that could be good. But if you're going to have a ranked ballot and you're going to feed it into a computer, and then the lights and the tape drives are going to spin around and it's going to spit out a number that you can't follow this thing, I'm not going to be participating in any more elections like that. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, and just a quick update as to the format change that we're having today. Today we'll be having a regular podcast going back to the full 3 hours. And as a word of explanation, I said it on Friday, I thank the people at KHNC and the audience there. I really do appreciate the opportunity to get back on the air there. And hopefully, at some point in the future, we may do that again. There were a couple of issues with it. I wasn't happy with the time slot that we had to wind up getting in there. And so it made things a little bit difficult for me to cut this show an hour short instead of adding another hour. And because it was a different audience, I was always kind of walking the tightrope between, well, should I repeat what I did for these 2 hours, or because there's very important things that need to be said to that audience, and there's some overlap, but I wasn't sure how much overlap there was between the two audiences. And so there was some repetition there, even though it was a faster-paced, shorter format, especially once you get rid of the commercials that I put up on podcast platforms. So that was one aspect of it. At first, I thought the radio program was going to air in the afternoon, which would allow me to essentially do a one-hour update as to what had been released, because most of the news starts coming out about the time this program ends in the morning. And so it would give me an opportunity to respond to the breaking stories of that particular day. So I wind up doing more analysis on the podcast, but it would have been more of a news orientation. So that was the first problem. And then we had some issues in the sense, technical sense, and having to dial in. If you listen to the podcast, you know that we had some audio issues. We had dropout. We had quality issues. And that all had to do with the dial-in format, which was required by them. It wasn't anything that was inherent on our end in terms of bandwidth, but it was just the voiceover internet protocol that had some issues there. And then there was the financial issue, which I wasn't expecting to get much money out of it, but there was some idea that there was going to be something there in terms of revenue sharing, but that did not manifest, even though people seemed to think that I was making money out of that. So for all three of those reasons, we decided to discontinue it after a couple of months. We may get back on radio. I really do like doing radio. I like being able to play whatever I want in terms of music and not have to worry about copyright issues. It's very restricting not to be able to do that. So that was one thing that I really miss about doing radio. And if we go back to that kind of a format, it would be in the sense that we would create a prepackaged show with segments already done, and then provide them to the shows. And we may wind up doing that because since we don't have the capability to take phone calls and handle that, and it's not even, we haven't put a lot of effort into trying to get the technical capability to do that, because I'd much rather read letters that people send in. It allows me to go through that much more quickly and not have to do all the handshaking that happens when it's a conversation with people. And also the sense that whenever I start to take calls, it always bothered me because I'd been on the other end of it as a caller for many years. And I know what it's like to have to sit there and wait for 10 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour before you can speak because there's something you really want to say. And it's difficult to get through the calls and to get to the people who are waiting. And sometimes we run out of time. And that always made me feel really bad. So I'd much rather have a situation where I can condense the comments that people make and do it that way. So we haven't gone to a lot of trouble to try to take live calls. It is good to have live calls. I like the back and forth. It's just there's a lot of overhead and a lot of issues with people who hang on the line for a very long time. So the bottom line is we want to welcome the people who are listening on aftermath.fm. We have, and you can listen to that for free when it is live. There's an app there, and then there's a lot of other programs that are on Aftermath as well. And so you can support that, and you can get access to the archives there on Aftermath as part of that fee. But you can listen when the program is live for free as an audio file. And so that kind of joins and complements what we've been doing with the video on Trovo and DLive. And I think, Travis, on Aftermath, there is people can comment and interact with each other as well, just like they do on the other live broadcasts like Trovo and DLive. So it offers a unique set of features, and we're really happy to be on Aftermath and welcome the people who are listening there. And you may want to listen to that if you just want to get audio only. Let's talk a little bit about Biden's reign of domestic terror, because that's really what is shaping up here. We now have, as you've seen, all of the groundwork laid after the January 6th situation. You now have the Biden administration kicking in a little over $6 million to create a database to try to do more in-depth identification of everybody that was there. And we've seen tremendous abuses of police power. The case that I talked about last week, and I talked about it a couple of weeks before that, they went on with Laura Ingraham, talked about the continuing ordeal, this couple in Alaska who didn't go anywhere near the Capitol building. They were just in Washington, exercising their constitutional rights to redress their grievances and to peacefully assemble. And yet, they get a squad of FBI goons going through their home, confiscating computers and phones. And now when they travel, because they traveled from Alaska down to California for a funeral and for a wedding, they got harassed endlessly at every one of the, they had three different stops that they had to make and transfers. At every one of those, they got an unbelievable amount of harassment and inspection three times in one particular stop. So we've seen this type of thing. We have seen what is happening to the people who have been put in jail without any due process, because this is now a government that is terrorizing us domestically. This is a domestic war of terrorism. The government against the people, which is what this was always intended to be. You know, people who cheered George W. Bush and the Patriot Act. Many conservatives did. Oh, yeah, we got to have that Patriot Act to protect us from those Muslims who flew two planes into three skyscrapers and had three skyscrapers fall into their footprint. So we fell for that. Didn't see the danger in that. Didn't see the precedent in that. Just as you got people still cheering Trump who don't understand the precedent of the red flag gun laws. Just take the guns and do the due process later. Or the vaccine mandates that he cheered in 2019. You got to get the shots, kids. Sorry, to go to school, you're going to have to get shots. Or the executive orders that did gun control. And I could go on and on and on. So these precedents of these presidents have consequences. So now, $6 million being paid to a multinational firm to create a database to start to ferret out his political opposition. That's what this is, to go after domestic opposition, to criminalize political dissent. That's the next step. We've had massive censorship, removal of people because of political points of view, and now this is going into criminalization. Deloitte Financial Advisory Services. I don't know if that's, I guess it's part of Deloitte and Touche. I don't know. Touche. Following the Capitol breach, the U.S. recognized that due to the nature and volume of materials being collected, they say, this is the Capitol Police saying this in a court filing, the government would require the use of an outside contractor who could provide litigation technology to and support services to include highly technical and specialized data and document processing and review capabilities. So why haven't we seen any of the massive amount of footage that they recorded of this, right? Well, you know why? Because a massive amount of footage would go against their narrative. They carefully constructed a video showing violence in a few places. But if you saw the bigger picture, right, they can carefully curate and edit this. I mean, it is the type of thing that you see done all the time. Political rallies that we used to cover, nobody would show up. You would have a candidate forum where you'd have all of the state Senate candidates, you know, or not state Senate, but, you know, all the U.S. Senate candidates in the state would show up for a political forum. Nobody would show up. And so the media would get on the side and they'd take a shot of the crowd and show people who were lined up, most of whom were supporter, were people who were staff of these individuals, to make it look like there's a crowd there. You can distort this kind of stuff very carefully with editing and with camera angles to make it look like it is completely different. If we had the video, you would see how the vast, vast, vast minority, that the violence is perhaps 1% of 1%. Once it is there, the government will begin systematically reviewing materials for potentially discoverable information, tagging when possible. For example, videos be tagged by location. And you go, what's that called? Oh, yeah, geospatial intelligence, right? This is what these people have always been about. And this has always been the focus of, for the last 25 years, this has been the focus of the intelligence community, geospatial intelligence, to snoop on Americans. They came up with the technology, they gave it to the Chinese to do beta testing on, and now it's coming home to roost. And it's being done for political purposes. So it starts out with $6.1 million, but they believe that it's going to soon go up to $25 million. Yeah, you're going to have this go up about six times pretty soon. Because they have now listed the end date as May 31st, 2027. This is a long-term event, folks. They're going to set up a database between $6 and $30 million. They're going to run it for at least 6 years. It'll become permanent. And this is for one event on January the 6th, where you had maybe 1% of 1% of 1% of the people got violent. As Lauren Boebert, Congresswoman from Colorado, said, where is the Antifa database? These people who were burning down cities last year. Where is the BLM database? The people who were burning down cities last year. This is if the DOJ has given up on all investigations other than January the 6th, and that's exactly what has happened. And then there are the people who are rotting away in jail. A judge, a Washington, D.C. judge, has now called out the District of Columbia jail for holding this individual's name is Jordan Mink, the defendant. He has been in prison now for months, and they have not allowed him to have any access to any evidence. Now, let me tell you, this is not anything new. I've reported on this. I reported how they did the same type of thing to the people at the Bundy Ranch that they had arrested. This has been standard operating procedure that has not gotten a lot of exposure in the press. Now, maybe people will start to pay attention. I hope they do. This should not be allowed under any circumstances for anybody. Even people that I think are violent criminals should have due process. That's why we have due process. It's why it is important to stand up for due process, because the most dangerous criminal you could ever have is the government. If the government is allowed to operate outside and above the law, that is the most dangerous situation you could ever have. They're far more dangerous than one individual serial killer. They're far more dangerous than a terrorist, because when the government assumes that kind of capability, the damage that it can do is off the charts. The judge said, Judge Randolph Moss, good for him, he said, I cannot allow someone to sit in prison for this long without access to this material. He said the delay in evidence was, quote, utterly unacceptable and not consistent with due process. During the court hearing, prosecutors said that they had given the evidence to the jail back in May, and they didn't understand why the defendant, Jordan Mink, hadn't been able to obtain the documents. Mink was offered a plea deal, prosecutors noted, but they said he can't decide on whether to accept the deal because he hasn't seen the evidence against him. Where did that come from? Seems like once upon a time we had a lost civilization, now lost civilization, on these shores of America. And that now lost civilization said, you know, it's probably very important that if somebody is arrested by the government, they have a speedy trial. They're shown the evidence against them. They're allowed to confront their accusers. You give them a jury trial and you do it fast. You don't keep them months in jail and abuse them as these people are being abused, as it has now become standard procedure to abuse anybody that the government views as an enemy. I've talked about the trials of Ross Ulbricht, who was a poster child. When the government wanted to fire a warning to people, they used Silk Road. They said, you're not going to have any black websites or dark websites that are not going to be open to us. You're not going to be allowed to buy and sell things that we prohibit using cryptocurrency. They manipulated things to make an example out of Ross Ulbricht, and he's now serving multiple consecutive life sentences, which means that he is not eligible for parole. And the basis of all of that were lies that were put out by the media. You had a prosecutor in one jurisdiction make allegations, but never an indictment, never a charge. And think about it, how easy it is to get an indictment with a grand jury. As I say, you can indict a ham sandwich. Why? Because there's nobody arguing the other side of it. It's the prosecutor only giving their side of it. That's basically, we've had a grand jury process to lock us all down in this last year. You've had Fauci acting as the grand inquisitor with the blessings of Trump, giving all of his evidence without anybody being allowed to testify on the other side. And whenever you have a trial, you always have if it's a forensic trial. You always have, if you have a case that goes to trial that is a serious case, there's always going to be forensic evidence. And both sides are going to pull in experts. They're going to have people who have impeccable credentials, very impressive credentials. Otherwise, there's no point in having them there as an expert witness. Now, those expert witnesses are going to give completely contradictory versions and interpretations of the evidence. And then the jury is supposed to weigh that from the competing testimony of experts and make their decision. That's what we should be allowed to do on the vaccines, but we're not allowed to do that. That's what we should have been allowed to do on the masks and the social distancing and the lockdown. We should have been able to hear both sides and then weigh the evidence ourselves. Instead, we were given essentially a grand jury situation to lock us down. But getting back to Ross Ulbricht, you had in one jurisdiction a guy making the allegations that there was murder for hire, and this is while the FBI had taken over the Silk Road website and run it themselves. You had two FBI agents subsequently in a separate case convicted for stealing nearly $1 million, but the jury was not allowed to know that. They kept that information from the jury. And then when he was found guilty of doing some of these other things, not of murder for hire, found guilty of letting people buy and sell things that were prohibited by the government on the internet. When they found him guilty of that, the judge then used these allegations. Again, it was not even an indictment done by a district attorney in another area, but just allegations in the press. The judge used that to sentence him to these consecutive life sentences. And then the prosecutor, so-called prosecutor in the other jurisdiction, dismissed those allegations completely. Never went to a grand jury with him whatsoever. This is one of the cases that we had hoped that President Trump would pardon, but instead he pardoned a bunch of Israeli Mossad spies and a bunch of white-collar criminals that were friends of the Kushner family. That's what we got from President Trump in terms of pardons. Not Julian Assange, not Ross Ulbricht, not Marty Gottesfeld, not Schaefer Cox. I could go on and on and on. And, of course, you had John Kiriakou, the guy who exposed the torture that was being done by the CIA that produced the lies about weapons of mass destruction that was the basis for the Iraq War, because he exposed the criminal, the illegal, and the non-pragmatic torture. They sent him to jail. The woman who covered it up, Gina Haspel, was promoted by Trump to the head of the CIA. And then when John Kiriakou approached the Trump administration for a pardon, because he served this time in prison, and he's out, and I've talked to him many times, and he had already served his time, but he just wanted to have his criminal record expunged. And when he met with Rudy Giuliani and Rudy Giuliani's pals, Rudy Giuliani got up at one point, excused himself to go to the bathroom, and while he was out of the room, the other people there said, and I forget what it was $1 million or something like that, $1 million or $2 million, you give that to us and we'll make this pardon happen. Yeah. He said, obviously you know nothing about me. He says, if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't give it to you. And as, because John Kiriakou is a man of integrity, he told everybody about that meeting. Same thing I would have done. So anyway, so anybody that wants to talk about Rudy Giuliani getting the short end of the stick in terms of being disbarred, it's long overdue, folks. Long overdue. They may have done it for the wrong reasons, but it is long overdue. Anyway, getting back to this, the judge says that if this defendant, this January the 6th defendant, does not get access to the document soon, he said, I might consider letting him out. Now, that doesn't mean that he would be held harmless for what they've locked him up for. And again, I'm not sure exactly what they are alleging that he's done. I guess he's not sure either, right? So how would I know? They haven't shown him the stuff. Just lock him up, throw away the keys. You remember when we had the 2012 NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, where they funded the defense, and that was under the Obama administration. And part of the thing there was indefinite detention by the U.S. military without any due process. That's what this looks like. There have been other reports of January the 6th defendants not being able to gain access to evidence against them. And again, this is nothing that is new for January the 6th defendants, even though this particular article seems to think that's the case. But this is now going to focus people's attention on it, which is a good thing. Prosecutors have suggested that due to the sheer number of arrests related to the incident, that there have been delays. No, that's not the case. As I point out, this has happened over and over again. The Bundy trial and many others that I've covered over the years. They said there's about 50 plus or minus that are being detained that have been in prison for months and will likely remain in prison for many, many more months until they get their day in court. And one of these people, a good example of this, of course, is Julian Assange. As Ray McGovern pointed out, the intention, the stated intention that they have talked about is to keep Julian Assange in prison and to move him around until he dies. And that is exactly what this is about. In some intercepted communications, you see them saying this, move him, that is Assange, from country to country to face charges for the next 25 years, but seize everything that he and his family own, to include every person linked to WikiLeaks. Pursue conspiracy and political terrorism charges. Declassify the death of a source, someone that could link to Wiki. And on and on. We know how this works. We know what this looks like. And now we know which side people are on, don't we? How do we know that? You look at what they do, not what they say. Biden does not need a domestic terrorism agenda unless he's about to violate American rights, says Brandon Smith, and he's exactly right. As he points out, the only two real legitimate things that the U.S. government has are to secure our borders from invasion and to protect the freedoms of the citizenry. Everything else is not really warranted. And, you know, if we had a government that was small enough to fit in the Constitution like that, we wouldn't need the massive taxes and regulations that we have either. But they are determined that they're going to mask, track, vaccinate, mandate vaccinate each and every one of us. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
An interview yesterday with another broadcaster and that has a radio network, and he asked about that commercial that you just heard there. He says, oh, What are those beeps about? He might have been listening to audio, and I guess we need to give an explanation to the people who are listening to podcasts, because we have a lot of people who listen to podcasts. Because we were kicked off by PayPal and by Venmo, we had one individual who said, well, instead of redoing that commercial, why don't you just do a bleep there and bleep out the name, and we show the links to PayPal and to Venmo there, and we put a big X on it. So if you're listening to the audio broadcast of that on aftermath.fm, or if you're listening to it on the podcasts, that's what's going on. Those are the people who have censored us. And so we've censored their name in response. We will not say that name on the commercial, even though I just said it here. And we had an individual who sent an email to me saying that Dan Bongino is talking about setting up a payment platform as well that will be independent of the censorship that is being applied, because that is a big part of the another facet of the censorship. And that has been around for some time. Going back to the Obama administration, they called it Operation Choke Point, where they tried to cut off the banking services of people that they didn't like, beginning with gun retailers and gun manufacturers, but also to be extended to people that they did not like their politics. And so that is kind of where we are now and where we expect it to happen, to go. So it's going to be a good thing to have another alternative platform there. If we're going to take a look at it and see how it looks, but if that looks good, we'll let you know about that, because it will be important to support that, I think, to have a way that you can fund independent media without the kind of censorship that is being pushed through the banking system, which is at the heart of all of this. We have the federal government says that we're just talking about the database of political dissidents that Biden is setting up. The federal government says that it does not have a database of who has received the COVID-19 vaccine and who has not. This is the type of thing that we've been hearing from the Biden spokeswoman. This is a picture of her right there. She's giving the press release, speaking with forked tongue. We've heard that from her. We've heard that from Javier Becerra, head of HHS. No, actually, they speak with forked tongue. You know, CDC, I guess you could say, technically, when they say the federal government does not have a database of who's received this, well, the CDC does. I exposed that back in August. There were three states and one city that they had given the forms to back in August. And then in October, they gave it to every single state. And it was the same document that they'd given out in August. I went through it in detail at the time. I said, look at all the information that they're collecting on people. They had, if you go there to get a vaccine, they collected every bit of personal information that you can imagine on you. Name, address, phone number, serial number, name, rank, and serial number, your social security number, all of this stuff. And they said, well, we have to do it. We have to get that much detail of information because we need to make sure that you get the same brand of vaccine for your follow-up. Because at the time, they were saying, well, the only things that have been approved are the Pfizer and the Moderna, and you got to get a booster after 30 days. So we've got to know when and where you got it. And, you know, we're going to do all this due diligence since we didn't do a test of these vaccines. Now you are part of the test cycle. And so for the test cycle, we need to track who got this stuff and when you got it and where you got it. And we also need to have it as a reminder to tell you to come back in 30 days. And I said, well, yeah, but except that there's another field down there that shows that you refused it. Now, where would that be? So that tells you a couple of things. It tells you, number one, that this is being put out there by the medical community in general. This is not just a form that they're giving to the people at Walgreens that are going to be injecting you in the aisle, or the drive-through at McDonald's where you can get your shot or whatever, right? This is going to be healthcare providers who are pushing you to get a vaccine and then reporting when you refuse. It's going to be the hospitals. It's going to be the doctors that you go to see. They're going to be reporting this stuff to the CDC. That's why that field is there. But then the whole justification, well, you know, we got to make sure that if you got the Pfizer, then the second one is going to be the Pfizer. Or if the first one you got was Moderna, the second one is going to be Moderna. Now they're just mixing and matching these things. They don't care. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, they don't care at all. Oh, let's just, yeah, doesn't matter. You know, you got Pfizer, well, just have a Johnson & Johnson. But they've got that database. The CDC does. Now, when they say the federal government does not have it, technically that's true because the CDC is a private organization like the Federal Reserve. Private in the sense that it has vaccine patents, private in the sense that it is a 501c3 corporation where you can make donations. Do you know of any other government agency that is a 501c3? Do you? That tells you right there that it's a private organization, the CDC. So technically, that's true. The federal government does not have it. The CDC does. But on the other hand, the CDC is supposedly under HHS. Now, you have Jen Psaki, the press secretary for Biden, said the federal government does not have a database of who's been vaccinated. That is not our role. Well, she's right. It's not their role. And she's right. They're not the federal government, but they do have that database. We don't maintain a database along those lines, and we have no plans to. Oh, there you go. Now you don't have to worry because she told you they're not planning on doing that, except they've already done it. President Biden wants to send people to knock door to door to bully you into taking an optional vaccine. Anyone who wants a vaccine is able to get one. Leave everyone else alone, says Representative Jody Heiss, Republican of Georgia. Well, again, I would just say this is the war of drugs. Trillions of dollars spent over the last 50 years to try to keep harmful drugs. We're told they're harmful. So we've got to use law enforcement to keep people from taking addictive drugs. Well, that never worked out for alcohol. It'll never work out. It's a spiritual issue. You could call it a medical or psychological issue, but it's a spiritual issue that is not something that can be handled by law enforcement. And I've interviewed many former law enforcement and prosecutors, law enforcement against prosecution, against prohibition, LEAP is one organization. I've talked to Jim Gierak many times. Typically, you don't see the prosecutors, the judges, the police officers talk about this until they retire. And see, that's why this country is rotting, because people who know what is wrong will not speak out about it. And unless there is not going to be any consequences for it. So all they have to do is make consequences for it. But anyway, we're going to go door to door to coerce people. Now they're going to be, pushing this out for big pharmaceutical companies. And the thing that got everybody, and rightfully so, upset is when you had one of these counties, the Lake County Health Department's script, went out showing what they want to do. And so this is where they're going to go around to senior housing authorities. So they're going to target those people who are most vulnerable to the effects of this vaccine, as well as everything else, and who cannot really understand what is happening. So they said, we're going to systematically proceed from floor to floor. Using the tally sheet, we'll count those who are interested in getting the vaccine and those who refuse. But they're not going to keep that in a database. Scout's honor right there. Scout's honor. So here's a little dialogue. You go in, hello, I'm so-and-so, and I'm with the community health ambassador of the Lake County Health Department, and I want to talk to you about the vaccine. Have you received the vaccine? And then, you have the little decision tree. Yes. Oh, thank you. How are you feeling? Oh, you see, you're still alive, huh? Okay, well, has it been a while since you had it, or did you just get it? Do I need to notify next of kin yet? And then if they've not received the vaccine, you say, well, we're working on bringing the vaccinators. The vaccinators. Isn't that interesting? They call them the vaccinators. This is in the document here. We have from the vaccinator. I'm here to see you here. On site to provide vaccines for you and your neighbors. Are you interested in getting the vaccine here at your facility? That's actually their home. I mean, it's a facility. It's a senior-assisted living facility. But they do this at apartment complexes as well. It's a facility as well. You know that it's a problem when they start calling it a compound. I guess when you go down this decision tree after you continually refuse to do what they want, at that point they stop calling it your home a facility and they start calling it a compound because they're going to go to war with you, I guess. So the unvaxxed, the unrepentant unvaxxed, they will be living in compounds. Do you know when they'll be coming, says a senior. Well, I don't have an answer for that yet, but your property manager will be posting the information as soon as it is scheduled. Can I help you with anything else? Well, do you know which vaccine I'll be getting? Well, this is yet to be determined, but it'll likely be the blood clot version. Oh, okay. Well, I was kind of hoping that I could get, instead of the Johnson & Johnson, I get maybe the Pfizer. I think I could handle heart disease better than I could a blood clot. Well, we can't really do that because, the Pfizer, the heart attack version, is kind of hard to transport because we've got to keep it at very low temperatures and it doesn't last a long time. But the Johnson & Johnson, we don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And it's a one shot and you're done. So, person in their dialogue, they have this written down. Well, I don't hear anything good about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. They know people don't want to take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine was the one where they started, when they rolled it out, four different states, four different facilities, and they had four dozen people immediately have problems. They were stacking up ambulances to take them to the hospital, and that's why they shut everything down and said, well, you know, we've had six women that have been reported out of millions of people who've gotten the Johnson & Johnson and said that they had some blood clotting issues, and we've looked at this, and there's nothing at all to any of that rumor. But we shut everything down out of an abundance of caution. So see, we heard your concerns, and we've taken care of it. No, they had nothing to do with the four dozen people in four different states at four different sites. Anyway, so this is how the rest of this is how they can sell the Johnson & Johnson to them. The fact that you only need one dose, that's a real benefit. Senior says, well, if I get the vaccine, do I have to still wear the mask? Yes, silly slave. Wearing a mask, watching your distance, saying 6 feet apart. Do you think we're going to leave you sheep alone? Of course you're going to have to do all that, says the, it says right here. Yes, wearing a mask, doing all this stuff, watching your hands frequently, that'll be a part of your life for a while. Only 15% of the residents are vaccinated, so we need to practice all the COVID precautions until we eliminate this terrible virus. Now, the response that's in here, that is not in here, is always my response. Well, if the vaccination works, I mean, even Trevor Noah can figure that out. If the vaccination works, why do I have to do any of this stuff, right? You keep telling me it's 100% effective and 100% safe. So why are they carrying these people out feet first? And why do I still have to keep doing all of this stuff? And why does everybody have to get it, right? None of this makes sense. But this is the same lie that they've been telling people about herd immunity for a very long time. Herd immunity only works if individuals have immunity. See, there's the herd is nothing but a collection of individuals. If you have no individual lasting immunity, then you can never achieve herd immunity. It doesn't matter how many times you're vaccinated or what percentage of people get vaccinated. You're not going to ever have herd immunity if the individuals don't have it. Oh, and by the way, you want to talk about public health? There is no such thing as public health if the individuals that make up the public or make up the herd or make up the village, if those individuals don't have health and you're not concerned about individual health, then you're not concerned about the public health or the herd health or the health of the village either. You're just concerned about the health of your institution, the health of your career. And that's what these people truly focus on. So anyway, they go on with their dialogue. But the CDC does say that once 2 weeks after the vaccination, you can get together with friends and family who are also vaccinated. Now, what does this mean? Well, that is by implication saying that if you have friends and family who are unvaccinated, they are to be shunned. And we have seen this by the talking heads, by the so-called scientists. The politicians, if you will, have been saying that for quite some time. We just need to shun the people who are not vaccinated. And that includes your friends and family. Senior, I've had an allergic reaction to medications and foods years ago. Is this vaccine safe for me? To which the person, if this is being truthful, would reply to them, who cares? Big pharmaceutical companies have legal immunity, and the government doesn't care about any of this stuff. We don't care what happens to you. We don't care if you have had allergies for vaccines. It doesn't matter. And then if you see the document, building floor apartment number, then you have a column for vaxxed, or if they need to be vaxxed, or if they're not interested. And those are the people that we need to watch, right? So you have Biden's health secretary, and again, this is Javier Becerra. He made his career by prosecuting the people showing the murder for hire being done by Planned Parenthood. He defended them. He attacked the people who exposed that as part of this process. It was begun by his predecessor, Kamala Harris, when she was Attorney General for California. She then became Senator Kamala Harris. Javier Becerra took her place and continued the persecution of the whistleblowers, David DeLeiden, Center for Medical Progress, what they'd uncovered. And now, God works in mysterious ways. Because of the prosecution, the persecution of David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress, as part of that discovery of that trial, we now find that some of the biggest customers of this murder-for-hire scheme were the NIH and the FDA, that involved universities in California as well as the University of Pittsburgh. So there's this nexus of these federal Nazi science organizations who are looking to get fresh, not frozen, baby organs of viable children and paying large amounts of money and securing them through targeted abortions with Planned Parenthood, working with universities to do this. So all that has been exposed now. That's the way that God works. And so when you look at Javier Becerra, who is now the HHS secretary, and again, this is a picture of Javier Becerra. he is the HHS secretary for Joe Biden. And he's saying that, it absolutely is the government's business to know who gets vaccinated. Now, wait a minute. Didn't they just say that Jen Psaki said, we don't have a database? Oh, I don't. Funny that you would ask that. The sweating 60 minutes interview. Funny you would say something like that. We've never had a database of people. Going back to last year, we know that they did. But but it is our business to know. Because, you know, if we give you, we've spent trillions of dollars on this pandemic. Oh, yeah, you have. You spent us into poverty here. You spent us into what will likely turn into hyperinflation. You spent a lot of money. And this is the mindset of why I've always opposed federal involvement. Forget about the Constitution for a moment, the fact that they have no authority, and that if they ignore the Constitution, then we have a lawless group of people who then will disobey the Constitution in many other areas. But let's just look at it from a pragmatic standpoint here. We know that what the government does, whenever they give a benefit, they will always tie financial strings to it. Now, take a look at what's happening with the transgender athletes. Well, you know, we're going to give you money for sports. And, by the way, now what you have to do is you have to let guys into the girls' locker rooms and into the showers because we say so. And if you don't do that, we're going to withhold that money from you. So that's the way these people operate. They push this on you. And when you had Trump, his HHS secretary, was a big pharmaceutical CEO, Alex Azar, former CEO of Eli Lilly. And when Biden put in Javier Becerra, I said, well, first of all, it's very troubling when you look at this guy's history in terms of defending the murder-for-hire stuff. But I said, I think it tells us something about the direction that this is headed. During the Trump administration, Trump puts in a pharmaceutical guy to run Health and Human Services. Biden puts in a legal guy. And I said right away when that was announced, I said, this is for the vaccine mandates. This is why he's putting a lawyer in place at HHS. Trump put in the pharmaceutical guy so they could get the vaccine made. Biden is putting in the lawyer so they can mandate the vaccine. It's a professional wrestling operation. They're a tag team match for the globalists. Dupe number one puts in the druggie, and then dupe number two puts in the lawyer to push that on you. You know, we've seen for the longest time, he had a lot of campus reform interviews where they went on college campuses, and they would describe the policies of Trump, and they would attribute them to, by either implication or by outright saying, they would make people think that it was Obama's policies. And the kids would support those policies until they found out that it was Trump. But, you know, we saw exactly the opposite thing with the MAGA crowd. You could go to them and do the same experiment in reverse. You could give them the policies that Trump actually did as president, And they would hate those policies until you told the MAGA crowd that it was Trump. And they would do exactly the same thing we saw the college crowd do in reverse. Well, that's okay then. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's where we are. So this health secretary says, well, knocking on doors has never been against the law. You don't have to answer, but we hope that you do. Yeah, that's right. So the CDC has now released a new mask guidance for K through 12 schools beginning this next fall, saying that vaccinations should be tracked. So they're not tracking vaccines, except they're going to send people door to door to collect the information, which they've already been collecting as of last year. As soon as they started doing them, they put the forms out and started preparing to collect all the information, talking about how the information could be transmitted back up to the CDC. It was a very detailed document. I went through it. I showed what information they were collecting, and then I said, look at this. And it is all supposed to be transmitted all as soon as possible back to the CDC. The CDC is going to collect all of this stuff. Now they say, well, we don't have the database. But we could. We should. We have a right to collect that information on you. And now we are going to collect that information on the kids K through 12. That's what they're saying. This is CDC saying this. And, of course, they have been collecting this information on everybody else. The guidance from the CDC includes a directive that schools should remain open regardless, even if there is a big outbreak, they stay open now, regardless. And they will be doing all of the draconian, insane things that we have seen. The most important thing schools can do is to encourage as many students and staff to get vaccinated as possible. I guess the second most important thing is to make sure that you have drag queen story time hour for the survivors. Maybe Trump and Giuliani could find a new career. You know, I mean, Giuliani did that. Remember when he did that with Trump and, you know, sprayed the perfume on his fake breasts, and Trump rubbed his face in Giuliani's fake breasts? What a surprise that we find ourselves here with drag queens all over the place when conservatives and many churches are still applauding Trump as our Lord and Savior. Don't tell me that he's not your Lord and Savior, you politicians out there. You people who think there's a political solution, I see it all the time. Well, if you're telling me that Trump is not somebody we can trust, this all over then. I can't handle that. You're wrong. You failed. I had some guy send that to me on social media. It's like, no, pal, you failed. When you bought into personality, when you started following one individual and you paid no attention to the policies, you paid no attention to what he actually did in his life, no attention to what he did as president, you've got some fantasy. You think it's all going to work out if we somehow get Trump back in the White House, either 2 weeks from now or 3 years from now? Yeah. Achieving high levels of COVID-19 vaccination among eligible students, as well as teachers, staff, household members, the families, is one of the most critical strategies to help schools safely resume full operation. So they're going to hold that out there for people. They're going to come after you. Make sure that you understand that. Since not all students will be vaccinated by the conclusion of the upcoming school year, authorities should balance promoting vaccination with modified social distancing strategies. For example, all students should maintain at least 3 feet of physical distance inside classrooms. And this is all being done, of course, because of those vermin that we call unvaccinated. They haven't gotten their vaccine. So now see, Johnny, you know, Alice over there, her family, they're a bunch of anti-vaccine people. And, you know, you could have a normal life if it wasn't for Alice and her family. Don't you hate them? She's probably white Christian, too. For example, all students should maintain at least 3 feet of physical distance inside classrooms. If this isn't possible, then schools should resort to a layered strategy, including frequent testing. Test everybody all the time. Test, test, test. Ventilation, hand washing, and, quote, respiratory etiquette. respiratory etiquette. Etiquette. That is absolutely amazing. That's a euphemism I'd not seen before. Even the vaccinated may be asked to mask up indoors. Additionally, the CDC recommends that bus drivers and their passengers wear masks during the ride to and from school, regardless of whether they're vaccinated or not. Yeah. As a matter of fact, This is kind of, we can go back to Planned Parenthood CEO. If ever you want to hear somebody who is over-the-top authoritarian, yes, Dr. Leanna Wen, and she's back talking about how we've got to make life very hard for the vaccinated. And it's also making life for the unvaccinated, making life hard for the vaccinated and blaming that those restrictions on the unvaccinated as well. So you're going to hammer the unvaccinated, and you're going to make sure the vaccinated realize that all of these hardships that you're continuing in their life, that is because of these unvaccinated people. Just listen to what she had to say.
We get this under control, and which way we go depends on what we do now when it comes to vaccination, to overcoming disinformation. And what we really need to do at this point is to make vaccination the easy choice. It needs to be hard for people to remain unvaccinated. Right now, it's kind of the opposite. It's fine. I mean, it's easy if you're unvaccinated. You can do everything you want to do anyway. But at some point, these mandates by workplaces, by schools, I think it will be important to say, hey, you can opt out, but if you want to opt out, you have to sign these forms, you have to get twice weekly testing. Basically, we need to make getting vaccinated the easy choice. That is what it's going to take for us to actually end the pandemic.
All right, Dr. Lena Wen, Max Boot.
That Chinese communist you just heard there has called herself pro-choice all these different years. Imagine that. How long have I said, before any of this vaccination stuff started, even before you had people like her saying that kids needed to get the MMR vaccine, and that was in 2019, if you remember. Well, that's when, you know, you had a rash of jurisdictions saying you're not going to go to school unless you get the MMR vaccine. As a matter of fact, in New York, they're saying we're not going to allow you to have private schools either. We're going to shut down the religious schools, the Orthodox Jewish community. No, you're not going to have those schools. You're only going to be able to go to your private schools if you get the vaccine. And in response to that, you heard President Trump say, they got to get the shot. They got to get the shot. They got to get, yes, measles. Yeah, of course. Got to get the shot, right? Trump is part of a generation where we all understood measles were not serious because we all got them. Yeah, there was a rare case where somebody, you know, there's a rare case where somebody dies by slipping in the bathroom, in the bathtub. But I still don't consider the bathtub to be a dangerous place. I understand there's some precautions that I use with it, but I don't consider it to be a dangerous place. I never considered measles to be dangerous. Nobody in our generation did. Trump is older than I am. He knows better than that. Why would he say they got to get the shots? He was preparing people. And this person who masquerades as pro-choice, it was people of that ilk in California, New York, Massachusetts, who were pushing the vaccine mandates. And I said at the time, these people who, it's the same people who say, you're not going to have homeschooling. We don't want you making those kinds of choices for your kids. We're going to tell you which vaccines your kids have to have and which ones are going to be necessary for them to go to school, to live their lives. I said they're not pro-choice about anything except killing a child. These people are not pro-choice. They are pro-murder. They are pro-depopulation. And that's exactly where she still is. Absolutely amazing. So we got to make it easy for people if they want to get vaccinated, but we got to make it very hard for the people who are unvaccinated. And what she does not say, but what is true in the CDC regulations, is that they're going to make life hard for the vaccinated and blame it on the unvaccinated. Babylon B, 7 clever ways to scare off Biden's door-to-door vaccine evangelists. And that's exactly what they are. Number one, answer the door while casually cleaning your AR-15. Greetings, agent of the government. What can I do for you today? Number two, wear a MAGA hat. That works every time. Number three, sneeze violently. That would be the a no-no in terms of respiratory etiquette, right? Sneeze violently and say that you're starting to lose your sense of taste. Does this apple taste like anything to you? Here, have a bite of it. Everything is starting to taste bland to me. You could just smile and offer to shake their hand. Nothing scares the pro-science crowd like interacting with a normal human being. They'll go running for the hills. And then we have the Republicans, like Adam Kinzinger, going on with fake Jake Tapper. Now, this is a guy, he's a Republican in name only, Rhino, from Illinois. He said yesterday on one of the talking head shows, CNN's State of the Union, that, quote, clown politicians, unquote, claiming that door-to-door vaccines were akin to Nazis is, quote, absolute insanity. Jake Tapper said, a number of your Republican colleagues are expressing outrage over President Biden's call for door-to-door outreach to encourage Americans to get vaccinated. And he specifically referenced Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and others. That Ted Cruz says it sounds like Soviet Russia. What's your response to that? Kinzinger said, it's absolute insanity. What President Biden said, and maybe he could have said it slightly differently, was, we're willing to come to your house to give you a vaccine. At no point was anybody saying that they're going to break down your door and jam a vaccine into your arm despite your protest. Well, no, they didn't say that. We all feel like that moment is building up, though. And quite frankly, when I look at this and I look at the cheerleaders of President Trump, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, do they not realize that it was under President Trump that Admiral Brett Giroir, who was running the Operation Warp Speed delivery at the time, said, we're not just going to be delivering this stuff, we're going to be putting in people's arms. And under Trump, we had the National Guard going around intimidating people at nursing homes, at schools and other places to, oh, we'll just make it easy for you. Here, we'll put this, don't you want this? I mean, I think that is criminal to have people show up at schools wearing military uniforms. That's another level of pressure, of peer pressure, of pressure from authority figures for these kids. And in some of these jurisdictions where they showed up, they maintain the fiction that you don't need to have your parents' consent. So you go to a jurisdiction where you don't need your parents' consent, you have the National Guard show up in uniform to vaccinate people. You don't have a problem with that, MAGA crowd? I have a big problem with that. I know exactly where this is coming from. This is a continuation. Again, Biden and Trump, when it comes to this lockdown, the vaccine, the global agenda, the Great Reset, they are a professional wrestling tag team match. Jim Jordan wondered whether or not this means that government agents will be knocking on your door to see if you own a gun next. Yeah, that's right. A South Carolinian's decision to get vaccinated is a personal one for them to make, and now, and not the government's, said the governor of South Carolina, McMaster. He said, enticing, coercing, intimidating, mandating, or pressuring anyone to take the vaccine is a bad policy, which will deteriorate the public's trust and confidence in the state's vaccination efforts. Well, now I agree with that completely. I think it's insidious. And I said so when President Trump gave $250 million to the Ad Council to entice, coerce, intimidate, mandate, or pressure people through the media. Never before has the Ad Council had so much money thrown at them as President Trump gave. And I think that needs to be called out. And I said, when we were talking about the election, I said, you won't see the Republicans even saying anything against this propaganda, against this vaccination program. They won't even say anything as long as Trump is the one in charge. They will speak out against it for partisan purposes, not because they're against the vaccination agenda, because you can hear McMaster say, well, you know, we want people to trust the state vaccination program. We want them to get the vaccine. This is going to work against that. No, they know that, as I said before, if you were to tell the MAGA crowd the policies and say, you know, it's Biden who wants to go out and vaccinate everybody. It's Biden who wants to give tens of billions of dollars to the vaccine companies to create a genetic modification injection. And they would have recoiled in horror, right? But you tell them it's Trump, it's like, it's okay. It'll be all right. It's okay. I'm not worried. It's Trump. Yeah, he's playing 4D chess, says Alex Jones. So trust him. Trust him. It's not a problem. And anything that goes wrong, the vaccines now, according to Alex Jones, now the vaccines are just horrible. But it doesn't have anything to do with Trump. Because we can still applaud everything that Trump does. Even though Trump is still applauding the vaccines and still taking credit for creating them, we have to pretend that that doesn't exist. It is a kind of Orwellian doublethink that people like Alex Jones and the conservative media have you involved in, so that you can hate the vaccine but love the Trump who gave you the vaccine and the $250 million propaganda campaign. You have comedian Rob Schneider getting a lot of flack because he tweeted out, over half of the U.S. population is continuing to say no to this unapproved experimental gene therapy. It's my body, my choice, he said. And then hashtag Second Amendment is for this, he wrote. Well, they got very upset about that. You called it a gene therapy? Well, that's exactly what Moderna calls it. They're honest about that. He says the Second Amendment is for, one person said, the Second Amendment is for voluntary vaccinations? I'm sorry, but they're not talking about voluntary vaccinations. As a matter of fact, let me, before I start talking about the mandates here, I had a listener who said he had an epiphany as he was listening to some of these news reports. He says, what are the odds that you would have all of these different vaccine companies that would at the same time independently decide that they're all going to create, and this is the case of all four of these vaccines, whether it's Moderna and Pfizer doing it encapsulated, pegylated into a polyethylene glycol nanoparticles, or if it is Johnson & Johnson or AstraZeneca, they are piggybacking the mRNA on an adenovirus. But all four of them have got genetic modification to create a spike, the protein spike, that does all the damage. So what are the chances that all four of them would follow that same idea at once? And they're not suing each other for any copyright violations. Isn't that interesting? It's a kind of kind of interesting perspective. But it's voluntary? It's just a voluntary vaccine, is it? Well, Politico and Harvard put out a poll asking Americans about vaccine mandates, because this is where we're headed, to the mandate. I think by this fall, I'll mention that again, the timing. Americans are almost evenly divided over whether schools or most private employers should require COVID-19 vaccinations as part of reopening. There is a culture in a part of the country that is very resistant to having the government tell people how to live their lives. Think about that. That is what the person who is running this for the Harvard School of Public Health had to say. You know, there's this part of the country that doesn't think that the government should tell people how to live their lives. And then there's another part that says the government should tell people how to live their lives. That's the astonishing thing to me, is that that doesn't raise any red flags with him or anybody else at Politico? The fact that we have, and we know that's the case, and we know what political party they're with, and they think that the government ought to tell you how to run your life. Let me tell you something. All these people who are out there finding racism and slavery everywhere, that are trying to reconstruct our society on the basis of this is an empire. This is colonialism, and they ignore our foreign wars. They say this is slavery. And then they say the government's going to tell you how to run your life. The government will tell you what medicine you can have and which medicine you cannot have. And that's what they did this last. You cannot have ivermectin. You cannot have HCQ. You cannot have stem cells. You cannot have intravenous vitamin C injections, and on, whole list of cannot haves. And then there's a list of must haves. If the government tells you where you can go, what you can do, what you must have put in your body, what you cannot do to treat yourself, are you a slave to them? You know, they keep talking about herd immunity. Why? Because they see you as cattle. They don't see you as a human being created in the image of God who has freedom and dignity. This is B.F. Skinner manipulation time. They will propagandize you. They will lie to you. They will censor the truth. They will stop any and all debate. They will do whatever they have to gaslight and to control you. They don't see you as human. They don't see you as anything other than a slave. So what do we do? Well, you know, to keep everybody distracted from the high-tech slavery that we're being channeled into, they have everybody fighting over slavery that existed and was stopped 160 years ago. That's what they're doing. Yeah, you're nothing but livestock to them. So this guy who's the Harvard Public Health School, the guy's name is Blinden, he latched on to a term that has appeared in the media before, and that there is a common misunderstanding, he said, of what a vaccine passport is. Now remember, this is coming from Politico. So he takes exception to the term vaccine passport. He doesn't think that that is accurate. He thinks that's over the top. He said somebody, quote, decided that this would be a cute name. A passport is something that most people carry only if they want to go overseas. Now, let me ask you, do you think that somebody who is an instructor or whatever his, he's head of the public health school at Harvard, right? Do you think that he is that stupid? Does he have access to a dictionary or the internet? Does he know what a passport is? It doesn't mean that you're going to a foreign country. We've all seen the movies of the Nazi-occupied countries, where as you're walking down the street, you have to show your identity papers, please. And so, what is a passport? Well, it's a pass. It's like a hall pass. Would he be happier if we called it a hall pass? It's a pass. And the port aspect of it is you're entering a new area, right? So if you want to enter a business, if you want to enter that portal, or if you want to go to a public event or into a public area, we've seen this happening in United Arab Emirates, you're not going to go into public space unless you've had a vaccine. So you got your passport to get into public space. What is so insidious about this that Politico and this Harvard public health guy, Blinden, does not want you to see? What's so insidious about this is that they're setting up a passport regime to make you travel within your own area. This is not going into a foreign country. This is not crossing any jurisdictional lines. This is just traveling around in your own community that you have to get their permission. You have to get a pass from them. That everything is screened. That all of your movement is controlled as if you were going to a foreign country. That is the principle that is involved here. And let me tell you, he knows that. He's not that stupid. So he said, where do we get that? This is a cute little name, but it doesn't have anything to do with reality. It has everything to do with reality. This guy is a deceiver. They go on to say in Politico, the pressure is growing on the FDA to grant full approval for Pfizer and for Moderna's COVID-19 vaccines, a move that can make it easier for employers and for local governments to mandate vaccines. They got all over Rob Schneider and said, are you talking about defending yourself with a gun for voluntary vaccines? No, we're talking about mandated vaccines. And even the voluntary vaccines are coerced through your employer. Blinden, the Harvard guy, suspects that businesses, especially small and medium-sized companies looking to hire people in a tight labor market, won't have much choice, given that more than half of employed Americans oppose a workplace mandate. See, this is the thing that is in our favor. The can-do people, the people who want to work instead of staying home and collecting a check from the government, are the same people typically who are skeptical of these vaccines. We're the ones that they need, and we need to stop letting ourselves be used. They need us more than we need them. We don't need the Richard Bransons and the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezoses and the Donald Trumps of this world. Those billionaires are exploiters. They're users. They're slave masters. Get off the plantation. He said, so they're going to have leverage on this. And that will be the case until they get artificial intelligence in sufficient numbers to automate things. And they've already war-gamed years ago, about 5 years ago. They were talking about how a study in South Korea said by 2030, we will replace 70% of the doctors and lawyers with artificial intelligence. It's not just the people at entry-level positions or low-skill positions. No. It's going to be the doctors and lawyers. It's going to be everybody. I've said this for the longest time. It's going to be across every industry, and it's going to be from top to bottom. This is just a holding pattern that they're in right now. And that's why we have to use our leverage now. start to create our own alliances, our own structures, our own companies, start to create our own payment systems, start to get out of their monetary systems. Why it's so important, and again, I'll reemphasize the two things that I talked to Catherine Austin Fitz about, and I posted that interview at the top. I fixed it at the top of my feeds on Gab and on Twitter, because the two things that we talked about in the interview, number one, these forms to put these people trying to mandate stuff and coerce your kids, it puts them on their back foot. And it says, I do not authorize this. And if you please acknowledge this, and if they don't do it, you send them, you know, a series of three letters and saying, by your silence, and you send them registered mail. She has the instructions. It's very well thought out. By your silence on this, I'm taking that as your assent and your understanding that you do not have authorization to vaccinate my children here. But then also the types of things that you can do with your employers when they start to coerce you. All the different things that you can tell them, that you can warn them about. And you have to, this has always been the way that we handle an aggressive predator. The first report that I gave when I came to InfoWars was to talk about how we have to rise up against these people and shout and get aggressive. And it was based on signs that I would see about bear, the bears in Smoky Mountains. And they say, if you see a bear and they're starting to, you know, take interest in you gradually, you know, what they do that slowly. They start to move towards you slowly. And they look like they're not being aggressive. I mean, they don't crouch down or anything like you would see the kind of aggression in a big cat or something like that. But they just kind of lumber along. Oh, I'm just kind of here, you know. All of a sudden, when they get close to you, then they pounce, right? And so you see something like that, you start yelling and screaming. And you can go on YouTube now and you can see the videos of how people handle that. You can see videos of how the two bears will kind of lumber around, not really interested in each other until they get within about a foot of each other, and then it's on. And you watch that. Watch a couple of bears as they come together to fight. And then watch as you've got some people who know about bears, and they're out hiking, and you see this bear start to lumber up to them the same way. And they start screaming and shouting. He pulls out his gun. But mainly, you know, he doesn't want to get into that if he can scare the bear off. So he starts screaming and shouting and then takes a step forward to the bear in an act of aggression. And that's exactly what they said. They said, if you have bears there, you know, scream and shout, wave your arms, throw sticks and rocks if you need to. Do not run. Do not show weakness. Do not turn your back on them. And that applies to human predators just as much. We have to handle the human predators in the same way. You get in their face and you make them understand that you're not going to give up this territory. You're not going to give up your freedom and dignity. Now, you can also, there's a bunch of videos that you can see on YouTube. There was one of charging elephants. A charging elephant. Think about that. Look it up. Very interesting. See the guy there is part of the safari. And the elephant is charging. He stands his ground, doesn't move at all. And the elephant kind of stops like, what, this is strange. He's not running from me. I'm an elephant. Right? I mean, this is pretty impressive when you see how big this thing is and it's coming full speed. And there is a sign they talk about in the videos. You know, sometimes you can tell if an elephant is just trying to intimidate you or if they're really serious about killing you. They handle their trunk in a different way. But anyway, he does that, and then you know, he stands his ground. The elephant stops and is thinking about this, and then he makes a move, and the elephant backs up and eventually kind of lumbers off slowly. That's what we have to do with these charging elephants, these globalists, and we can do it. And it's not just a single one of us. It's a whole bunch of us. And it's not really a bluff either, because if we're serious about this and if we understand what this is truly going to lead to, it's always the vast majority of people set things out. You have a small minority of people who want to push this on us, the billionaires, the people who are sending themselves up into space. very interesting to watch this stuff and think about Hugo de Garis and the book that he wrote years ago. I've interviewed him many times about that. The Ardalec Wars, saying that as they push this agenda and as people start to realize what this agenda is, the technocratic elite that Zbigniew Brzezinski was talking about in the 1970s, that Elon Musk's grandfather was pushing for technocracy back in the 1930s, the technocratic elite will go off planet. That's why he says that there's going to be a massive war over artificial intelligence, over technology by the global elitists, this billionaire class. They have the technological edge. They will wage war from their safety on their space platforms, like you saw in the movie Elysium, as what Jeff Bezos aspires to with the Gerard K. O'Neill, the book was High Frontiers back in the 1970s. Bezos read it. I read it when I was in engineering school as well. And very impressive ideas, and that's where you see the big toroids that are slowly rotating, creating a gravitational field, and they put them up in gravitationally neutral areas between the Earth and the Moon. There's five of them. They're called Lagrange libration points. Two of them are close proximity to the Moon, and from that standpoint, Gerard K. O'Neill's book, they could mine minerals on the Moon, and then shoot those. There you go. Good job. Thank you, Travis, for pulling that up. You can probably find some pictures of some of those. Look up Gerard K. O'Neill, High Frontier. Show people what that looks like. But they could, with maglev, they mine anything they wanted to on the Moon, shoot it up to these stations, collect it. They have an easy way to process stuff in space. You can get very, very high temperatures or very low temperatures just by the colors that you paint your devices, and then you drop ship it. So I can imagine that would be something that would appeal to Jeff Bezos. You just kind of drop it down to Earth. drop shipping. But in Hugo de Garis's book, he talks about gigadeath, saying these people, these globalist elite, once they get off Earth, and they set up these space stations, then they're poised to go to war with us, to get rid of us in a big way, so they can then come back and have everything to themselves. There was bipartisan support for vaccinating teachers and healthcare workers in the survey from Harvard and Politico. The survey found that 70% of respondents, 50% of Republicans with school-aged children thought the public schools should require teachers to be vaccinated. Think about that. 56% of Republicans think that that are mandate vaccines for teachers. 59% of Republicans favored healthcare institutions requiring their employees to get the shot. So nearly 60% of Republicans and about 60% of all respondents. It's about the same. It's not a big political divide that they want to say between Republicans and Democrats. 60% of Republicans want doctors and nurses to be forced to get vaccinated. Why do you have to force healthcare professionals to get vaccinated if it's safe and effective? Ask yourself that. Why would you, first of all, you have no business trying to coerce anybody into taking anything, but why would you, with all this talk about medical experts and doctors say this and doctors say that, so why would you presume that you, as a mob, even as a Republican mob of 59% of the people, why should a Republican mob of 59% of the people demand that doctors get vaccinated against their will? This is the insanity that we're living in. If cases among children emerge and children are hospitalized, War Games Harvard and Politico, then everything could change at that point. And let me tell you what's going to happen. They're vaccinating kids now. And everybody that gets sick, everybody that gets hospitalized, it will be blamed on not being vaccinated. It'll be blamed on variants. And that's going to be another reason for everybody to get another round of vaccines. Line them up. Shoot them again. Every person who gets sick, it will be because they didn't get vaccinated with the appropriate vaccine at the appropriate time. And so that means we got to vaccinate everybody everywhere for everything all the time. Oh, that sounds like I heard that somewhere before. IA 2030, Immunization Agenda 2030, done by Bill Gates. Everyone, everywhere, every age, vaccinated. And I would add, for everything. going right down the Gates agenda. Isn't that interesting? And then we have Dr. Fauci, or as I prefer to call him, the Godfather, going on with, again, Fake Jake. Fake Jake, yes, so he had a busy day. You know, he had Adam Kinziger on there talking about how coming door to door and pressuring people to get vaccinated, that's not anything inappropriate at all. And see, I got a Republican saying that here. Republican from Illinois, Adam Kinziger. And then he had Fauci on. And Fauci was absolutely horrified, that the people at CPAC were mocking him. They had Alex Berenson on, and he said, well, you know, they thought they're going to get 90% of the people vaccinated, but that isn't happening. And then they cheered. And I want you to hear, they play the clip, and then here's Fauci's reaction. And then he goes on to talk about vaccine mandates, because that's where they're pushing us, folks. Here is Fake Jake Tapper with Godfather Fauci, first talking about CPAC and vaccines.
I was hoping that they could sort of sucker 90% of the population into getting vaccinated, and it isn't happening, right? There's a younger people.
I'm going to cut him off right there because he just goes on to just say things that are not true about the vaccine. But
he goes on to say things that aren't true.
To get your reaction to is the crowd cheering when this gentleman talks about how the government was not able to achieve a 90% vaccine goal. The crowd cheers. As a public health official, what's your reaction when you hear that?
It's horrifying. I mean, they're cheering about someone saying that it's a good thing for people not to try and save their lives. I mean, if you just unpack that for a second, Jake, it's almost frightening to say, hey, guess what? We don't want you to do something to save your life. Yay! Everybody starts screaming and clapping. I just don't get that. I mean, I don't think that anybody who's thinking clearly can get that. What is that all about? I don't understand that, Jake.
On the other side of the political spectrum, the former Health and Human Services Secretary under President Obama, Kathleen Sebelius, said this week that she's frustrated. She thinks it's time for the Biden administration to push schools and businesses and others to mandate the vaccine. She said specifically, quote, I'm trying to restrain myself, but I've kind of had it. You know, we're going to tiptoe around mandates. It's like, come on, I'm kind of over that. I want to make sure that people I deal with don't have it, so I don't transmit it to my granddaughter, unquote. Now, Sebelius is giving voice to the frustration a lot of vaccinated Americans have about how it seems like society is bending over backwards to not offend people who refuse to get vaccinated. You know, people who are vaccinated have to wear masks on airplanes because airplanes don't want to mandate that you have to be vaccinated to fly. I know you've been very clear that the government isn't mandating vaccines, but do you think it's generally a good idea for businesses or schools to require vaccinations?
Right. I have been of this opinion, and I remain of that opinion, that I do believe at the local level, Jake, there should be more mandates. There really should be. We're talking about life and death situation. We've lost 600,000 Americans already, and we're still losing more people. There have been 4 million deaths worldwide. This is serious business. So I am in favor of that. You know, one of the things that will happen, and I think the hesitancy at the local level of doing mandates is because the vaccines have not been officially fully approved. But people need to understand that the amount of data right now that shows a high degree of effectiveness and a high degree of safety is more than we've ever seen with emergency use authorization. So these vaccines are as good as officially approved with all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. It hasn't been done yet because the FDA has to do certain things, but it's as good as done. So people should really understand that. But they're waiting now until you get an official approval before. And I think when you do see the official approval, Jake, you're going to see a lot more mandates.
My father's no different than any other powerful man. Any man who's responsible for other people. Like a senator or a president.
You know how naive you sound.
Why?
Senators and presidents don't have men killed.
Who's being naive, Kate?
Yeah, especially Republican presidents. They don't have people killed. And, you know, people who are responsible for other people's lives, you know, like Godfather Fauci. He ain't going to have you killed, is he? No, you can trust him. Like Fauci said, you know, we got to put aside this ideological difference, thinking that somebody is forcing you to do something. He said in the earlier part of the interview that I didn't play for you. Imagine that. You just heard what he had to say. Well, I think, Jake, we can't do that at the federal level, but we got to do that at the local level. I think employers need to do it. The local governments need to. We need to force people to do this. But, yeah, this is an island. Are you crazy? You think somebody's forcing you to do this? Yeah, I got an offer here. You can't refuse. But, of course, it's your choice. You can either take the vaccine or you can wear a mask forever. How's that horse head in your bed doing? It's ideological rigidity, he said. There's no reason not to get vaccinated. Why are we having red states and places in the South very highly ideological in one way, not wanting to get the vaccination, says Godfather Fauci. Vaccinations have nothing to do with politics. It's a public health issue. These are the kind of decisions the powerful men have to make, right? And so when we look at these kinds of decisions that are being made, and we can certainly trust the FDA to do this without any dishonesty or hesitation, right? Certainly without any hesitation when told by Godfather Trump, by the Don, that they've got to approve this now or you're fired, right? Well, you got Joel Hirshhorn, who I've interviewed before. I need to get him back on. He's got a book out talking about how it was easily treated last year. Same type of thing that you've seen from the America's Frontline Doctors recounting the medical malpractice that was financially incentivized by Donald Trump. I don't know that he necessarily lays it at Trump's door like I do, but that's certainly what has happened is financially incentivized medical malpractice, criminal. He says, when talking about the COVID vaccine's approval, the final approval, because that's what you heard Fauci say. You know, once we get, let's understand. I mean, for all practical purposes, it's done. We just got to dot the I's and cross the T's here. But, you know, it's done. We're not going to do no more testing. Are you crazy? Yeah, I'm not going to do that. On the good side, says Joel Hirshhorn, our medical articles and petitions to the FDA to stop the COVID vaccine. On the evil side are the big drug companies and big media arguing that there's no time to waste. And their perverted worldview, until full FDA approval happens, many people will justify avoid getting jabbed. And as Joel writes, what should greatly trouble people is that at least 7,000 deaths have been connected to the COVID vaccines. And of course, he wrote that on Friday, and then over the weekend we had, and that was on July the 9th, just after that went to press, we had the figures from the previous week, July the 2nd, which would have been not this last Friday, but a week from last Friday. The figures came out, and it jumped from 7,000 deaths reported to the CDC's VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. It jumped from 7,000 to 9,000 in 1 week. That's very big. That's very big. That's a 28% jump in 1 week. First, says Joel Hirshhorn, one word that is rarely seen in big media stories pushing for full FDA approval is the word experimental. Second, the enormous number of frightful stories of serious health impacts from getting vaccinated or avoided, like the proverbial plague. Third, there is no mention of major medical reports and two major petitions to the FDA by very credible health experts that demand more serious studies by the FDA of a multitude of safety issues and concerns. The most significant big media propaganda was a July 1st opinion article in the New York Times headlined, "It's time for the FDA to fully approve the mRNA vaccines," which is what you just heard Godfather Fauci saying. Vaccines have overwhelmingly been proven safe, says the New York Times, and effective by clinical trials, independent research, and the experience of millions of people around the world who received them. Well, Joel Hirshhorn says, understand this. A great many medical experts totally disagree with this assessment. And if you choose to check out what I give below, so will you. As I said before, we're hearing one side of the story. We're hearing an indictment of the unvaccinated people and those of us who refuse to participate in this fake pandemic. We're hearing one side of that. And just like in a trial, if you have a real trial, you have experts on both sides giving different opinions, and you're allowed to make that decision. This whole process is a kangaroo court to indict us. The dean of Brown University School of Public Health was more direct. He said, one out of every three American adults are still unvaccinated. The data is in. Vaccines are safe and effective. It's time for full approval. No, it's not. But that's what you're hearing from Fauci. You're hearing it from all of these Ivy League, academia, public health experts, because they're the ones who churn out the bureaucrats who populate these abominations that we call public health. There is no such thing as public health. There's individual health. And individual health has as part of it informed consent. Anything other than that is an attempt to take away our freedom and dignity. A Kaiser Family Foundation poll in May found that about a third of unvaccinated people, 32%, said that they would be more likely to get the shots if a vaccine received full approval. Imagine that. A third of the people can be fooled by the FDA rubber stamping something. I mean, haven't they seen how this thing works yet? It's absolutely amazing to me. So he goes through and he talks about some of the many places where you have 60 scientists here, two dozen scientists there, putting together a very detailed argument to present to the FDA. Will that make any difference? I don't know. Because the FDA, we have regulation without representation. We have taxation without representation. As I mentioned last week, you look at the FAA, able to give $10,000 fines to somebody not wearing a mask, a $12,000 fine, several people on average. Some of the people before that, we're getting $25,000 fines from the FAA. What about the whole process of presumption of innocence and due process and protection against excessive fines? None of that applies to the regulatory state. They do whatever they wish. You can comment on it. I comment on it. But it's not. They're not paying any attention to my comments. Reason asks, and of course, Reason is also pushing vaccines. Always have. They're very upset with people like me who are skeptical about this, to say the least. I'd say that'd be an understatement to say that I'm skeptical. Reason's headline: if the CDC can impose a nationwide eviction moratorium, why can't it impose a nationwide vaccine mandate? And that's exactly the point. And that's why I have camped out so heavily on this since it was first introduced last fall. Now, Reason has also been opposed to the CDC mandate. Why? Well, because they are so focused on material things. They don't have a problem with vaccine mandates. They don't have a problem with the vaccines themselves. They want people to get the vaccine so much so that they will push it. They don't have a problem with big tech companies controlling your speech. Why? Because it's corporations doing it. They're very focused on corporations, on material things. And so they have opposed the CDC's power grab, and they see it as a power grab, and they understand that it is a power grab. But I opposed it because, unlike Jacob Sullum, I understood that it is going to be used for all kinds of, and actually I say unlike Jacob Sullum, he now understands that it can be used to impose a nationwide vaccine mandate. If you give them these types of powers, if you allow them to assume these types of powers, as they did under President Trump, they assumed this power under President Trump, and they extended it twice under President Trump. They've now extended it twice under President Biden, because there's no difference between Trump and Biden on the lockdowns, on the vaccines, on handing over our government and our lives to a private organization masquerading as a government regulatory agency and dictating every aspect of our life, whether you can travel without a vaccine. You can't get on a cruise ship without getting a vaccine. You can't evict people during a pandemic, says the CDC. Where did they get this power? You've had four judges at lower court levels and one at appellate court say they can't. And then you had one judge at an appellate level and the Supreme Court say they can't. Even at the Supreme Court level, you had the tiebreaker. It was a 5-4 decision. Kavanaugh, who went the other way and gave them the power. Kavanaugh, Trump's appointment, gave the CDC the power, saying, well, they don't have this power, but they promised they're going to give it up at the end of the month. How in the world could you justify something like that? Seriously. This is a Supreme Court justice, and he supposedly doesn't understand the importance of precedent? Come on. According to the argument that the Biden administration, this is Reason Now, Jacob Sullum, according to the argument that the Biden administration has deployed in defense of the CDC's nationwide eviction moratorium, such a mandate is within the agency's statutory power, except statutory power that violates the Constitution. There's no law at all. Yet the Times, writes Sullum, yet the Times says, Mr. Biden's options to be more aggressive are limited. Well, why are they? New York Times. Why would they have any limitations on their power, right? We don't have, we pretend that there's no Constitution, that there's no Ninth and Tenth Amendment. These agencies can assume any powers that they wish. The federal government at any level, any branch, can assume whatever powers they wish, and nobody's going to stop them, right? So why would there be any kind of limitation on government? New York Times says, for the most part, the power lies in the hands of the states, employers, or private institutions. On what basis, New York Times? Are you appealing to the Ninth and Tenth Amendment? No, of course not. The eviction moratorium, which the CDC recently extended until the end of July, is based on a reading of the Public Health Service Act that could easily encompass a vaccine mandate, says Sullum. And he's right, because in the plaintiff's case, and this is the Alabama Association of Realtors saying, you can't tell us, CDC cannot define the terms of evictions. And remember, this whole thing was predicated on the lie that if we had homeless people, the whole country would die because of the pandemic. And of course, that was obviously not the case in California or Austin or any of these other Democrat strongholds where there's a massive number of people on the streets. That clearly was not the case. But that was the prevarication to say, well, you know, if people are going to be evicted, if they don't have some other place to go to, then they're going to be on the streets and that's going to, you know, stoke this whole thing. So the plaintiffs, the Alabama Association of Realtors, said to the Supreme Court, quote, this Public Health Service Act, the CDC believes, bestowed upon it the unqualified power to take any measure imaginable to stop the spread of communicable disease, whether eviction moratoria, worship limits, nationwide lockdowns, school closures, or vaccine mandates. You understand? All of that is on the table if you give this power to the CDC over moratoriums. They can do anything they want. That is totally out of any jurisdiction that they could reasonably claim if they were a legitimate organization, which they aren't to begin with. But they put that in there, and under that circumstance, and again, this is why you've got Biden putting in a lawyer, Javier Becerra, as head of HHS, which ostensibly is over the CDC. But with that statement there, how in the world does Brett Kavanaugh support that? Because what Brett Kavanaugh is doing is he's giving them tacit authority to put out vaccine mandates. They can mandate anything. Leon Panetta is demanding that Biden mandate vaccines for the military. Don't even wait, he says, for it to get FDA approval. Again, it's just a bureaucratic formality, which they're waiting for public opinion with this. And so Leon Panetta, and you remember Leon Panetta, I had high hopes for Jeff Sessions to some degree. I felt good about the fact that Jeff Sessions had confronted Leon Panetta about, because he was Secretary of Defense in the Obama administration, and he was pushing to get troops into Syria. And Jeff Sessions, if you recall the tape, and I'm not going to play the tape again, I've played it many times, just to paraphrase it, Jeff Sessions said to him, well, you're going to tell us if you're going to go into Syria, if you're going to start a war and put troops on the ground, ain't you? And he goes, well, Senator, we will consult with our allies, the UN and at NATO, and we will advise you what we decide. Well, wait a minute, said Jeff. You were a congressman before. You know what the Constitution says. You're supposed to talk to us and get our permission to do that type of thing. Well, as I said, Senator, we will talk to our allies and we'll let you know. Yeah, we'll talk to the UN, we'll talk to NATO, and we'll let you know about this. And I said, well, I'm glad that Jeff Sessions called him out on it. But I said, you know, you got to do more than whine about it, you know, like Gomer Pyle. Golly, I can't believe this guy's going to violate the Constitution. Who's going to stop him? Well, you're a senator. Why don't you do something about it? You could draw up articles of impeachment or something else like that. I may not get through, but at least you could take a stand against this guy. Try to start a movement. Nah, he left it at that. And that's basically how weak Jeff Sessions was. But this is Leon Panetta. This guy, you want to talk about an arrogant godfather. Yeah, that's Leon Panetta, all right. He says, well, frankly, I think the president ought to issue an order requiring everybody in the military to get a COVID-19 shot, period. That's an issue involving our national security. The last thing you need is to have those in the military that are our warriors unable to respond on a mission because they've gotten hay fever. COVID-19. That's what we're talking about here. It's easily addressed with ivermectin. It's easily addressed with HCQ. The government bought up massive amounts of HCQ under Trump, and they stockpiled it to keep people from using it. Just release the Kraken. When we look at how this is moving forward on day 485, isn't this interesting that in California, one county alone just dropped their death toll by 22%. It's all about the numbers, right? This whole thing is a numbers racket, right? It's the numbers. We got a surge. Well, they just had a desurge in California. Santa Clara, California. They refined their approach to this. They said it's important to go back and do this accounting to see if COVID was actually the cause of death, said UCSF professor of medicine and infectious disease expert Dr. Monica Gandhi. I think that transparent communication is an upside. I mean, in the sense that it's true that if we did this across the nation, it would bring our death rate a lot lower. Yeah, well, I think that it's probably going to drop a lot more than 25% if we were to do an honest accounting. But now we have testimony of a former HHS COVID advisor, because now he's no longer with the Trump administration. Now he can be honest with us, right? Saying, well, the whole idea of asymptomatic transmission is nothing other than a myth propagated by the CDC. As we and he has a tremendous amount of testimony that he gives in support of that. But we've had only 25 people under the age of 18 die from COVID in England. But we've had over 100 people died from suicide and trauma in new figures from the UK. And this is what we're seeing everywhere. Nevertheless, as you look at Australia, they are doubling down again. Sydney is now outlawing any browsing in stores and any non-essential purchases. You can only have one person per household get out per day. And this is absolutely insane what is happening here. And saying that this is going to last through August, because that is their winter down under. Our summer is where this is going. What you see happening in Australia, as well as worldwide, is nothing other than rehearsal for what is to come. But I want to take a quick look at the connection with big pharmaceutical companies before we end the show here. We have, when we look at this disgusting display of crony capitalism and regulatory capture that was on display for the entire world to see, with the FDA approving that dangerous and useless drug for Alzheimer's, where you had everyone on the scientific advisory panel except one person. They had about a dozen people on the panel. I think it was 12 people on the panel. They had all but one voted no, and that one voted to abstain. And they've never had a situation before where the FDA went ahead and approved a drug anyway against the advice of the scientific advisory panel. But they did it. And now, because they have come under so much scorn from across the political spectrum, because it has become very apparent the amount of corruption, and again, this is not only was that just an astounding move by the FDA, but within a week, you had three of those people off the panel of about a dozen people. It was 10 or 11 people on the panel. And you had three of the scientists resign, said, I'm not going to have anything more to do with this stuff. That was also unprecedented. And now Stat News, this is a trade publication for the pharmaceutical industry. And I've given you a story from Stat News before that was not widely reported. Stat News, as well as a British publication, did an investigation. They talked to, three South American countries. It was Brazil, Argentina, and a third that wished to remain anonymous. And they were saying that they were being shaken down by Pfizer to not only give them legal immunity from any damage that might be caused by their untested vaccines, but also to hold them harmless for any defects in manufacturing or any problems that were caused by shipping the vaccine and not keeping it properly refrigerated. And then what was even more astounding was that these three Latin American countries said that Pfizer also demanded that money be put in foreign bank accounts to hold them harmless, which is really astounding to say that you're going to give us legal immunity even for our manufacturing and shipping negligence. And furthermore, I guess they figured that when people start to realize how many hundreds of thousands of people have had their lives ruined by this, how many tens of thousands of people already in 6 months have been killed by this, that at some point there is going to be a surge to come after Pfizer and Moderna and the politicians who made this possible. And so they wanted to make sure there were going to be some offshore bank accounts held for them, because their legal immunity deals that they're striking with these quisling politicians everywhere probably weren't going to hold up when the mob gets angry enough. That's what they're worried about. Not only that, but they also made demands that they would have sovereign real estate in foreign countries that would be put up as collateral protection for them. Things such as embassies and stuff like that, that presumably they could go in and get the embassy and sell it. I mean, we think about the absurdity of that. I mean, an embassy is always considered to be sovereign territory of the company that owns the country that owns that embassy in that country. It's absolutely astounding. That was reported by Stat News. Stat News is a legitimate, by all accounts, a legitimate reporter about the pharmaceutical industry. And now this is what they're saying. Over and above the corruption that we witnessed with the FDA overruling their scientific advisory panel, all of them, and approving the drug that they all said was absolutely ineffective and it was also dangerous. Oh, and oh, by the way, it was unbelievably expensive. And so people on the left were saying this is going to bankrupt the entire healthcare system because we have so many people who are coming up who could possibly be put on this Alzheimer's drug. And it's so phenomenally expensive, something like $50,000 a year. It would bankrupt the entire health industry. So they started to take a closer look at it. Now, here's what Stat News found out. They found a great deal of corruption within the FDA. Their reporting has prompted calls for an office of the inspector general to do an investigation. And now the FDA is joining in. So some of the FDA people even are starting to pull back and say, I don't want to go down with this ship. They're starting to jump ship. And Janet Woodcock, who's head of the FDA, says, given the ongoing interest in questions, today I requested that the Office of Inspector General conduct an independent review and assessment of interactions between representatives of Biogen and FDA during the process that led to the approval of Aduhelm. So, what Stat discovered and reported, Stat News, reported that Biogen had an off-the-books meeting with Dunn, head of the FDA's neuroscience division, in May of 2019, enlisting his support for the treatment that would become Aduhelm. A month later, Dunn, again, this is the FDA neuroscience guy, and his FDA colleagues proposed using a regulatory shortcut and accelerated approval. You mean like warp speed? Yeah, exactly like warp speed. We'll do a shortcut and we'll have accelerated approval and we'll rubber stamp this whether or not it's safe or effective, just like Trump did with the vaccines that he continues to crow about everywhere. CPAC everywhere. So they would accelerate the approval process to get the drug approved. And this all contradicts, says Stat News, the agency's claim that it raised the option only this past March. This goes back to May of 2019. They were conspiring to do this. Conspiring to do this. The FDA was so supportive of the drug, Aduhelm, that even in 2019, some inside Biogen believed its approval was inevitable. And why not? Because they're doing this with the vaccines, right? Why wouldn't you expect that this is now business as usual? Look at what Fauci did for Gilead Pharmaceuticals with remdesivir. He tried to get it approved for the AIDS epidemic, and everybody said it's not effective. You can't do that. He tried to get it approved for Ebola. Everybody said it's not effective. You can't do that. He tried to get it approved for COVID-19, and they came out with studies and said it's not effective, and they put him up on the WHO site, and Fauci got it taken down within a couple of hours. And in 1 week, he put up his own NIH study about remdesivir and COVID that was not peer-reviewed. He put that up, and even his own study said it was not effective. So Fauci changed the definition of effectiveness and approval for a therapeutic. It has always been in the past, a therapeutic was considered to be effective if patients got better. Period. That's it. Patients did not get better with remdesivir. Instead, Gilead got richer. What he said was, well, it didn't make any difference as to who survived and who didn't, but, you know, the guys that got better, they got better, I think, about 30% better. So this is what I'm saying. It's now the standard of care. And they got billions of dollars worth sold in the U.S. and in Europe. And then there were some more studies done. And they said, sure enough, it's not effective. But he saved Gilead. Gilead was about to lose their patent on remdesivir. And he made sure they made billions of dollars off of that. So why wouldn't these people think they could do the same thing at the FDA? Why couldn't they do the same thing? And they nearly got away with it. The FDA and the CDC are now contradicting Pfizer. So now they're pulling back a little bit. It's like, oh, I just got burned on this Alzheimer's drug thing. Maybe we ought to slow walk this idea that Pfizer's got a booster vaccine out here for the new variants. Yeah, they've identified these new variants and they've produced some new vaccines and they got to get them out right away, says Pfizer and Moderna. And then the FDA and the CDC says, ooh, things are going to get a little bit hot around here, so let's slow walk this a little bit. Americans who've been fully vaccinated do not need a booster shot at this time, they said. Godfather Fauci insisted the U.S.-developed vaccines are extremely effective, despite Israeli scientists saying that the Pfizer jab might be only 64% effective against the Delta variant. The fact that these government agencies are breaking with Big Pharma is just the latest sign, writes Leo Hedge, that, as former New York Times reporter Alex Berenson said, they can't even keep their lies straight anymore. And in Israel, Israel has agreed that they're going to get the Pfizer booster shots targeting the new variants. All the current supplies of vaccines that Israel possess are due to expire on July 31st, and so they're maneuvering around trying to figure out how many people they can vaccinate who don't have any risk at all from COVID under 18, how they can swap these out with other countries and so forth, and how they can jump in and buy whatever Pfizer says they need to buy. They're completely controlled by Pfizer. For whatever reason, Netanyahu decided that he wanted to get everybody in Israel vaccinated before anybody else in any other country. And he basically made a Faucian bargain with him, sold the soul of the Israeli people to these guys, sold them as lab rats and guinea pigs, said, you put us at the front of the list, even though we didn't. We thought you guys weren't going to be first. You know, we were banking on Moderna. But you're going to be first, and you can manufacture this stuff in scale. So we want to be first with you. So we will collect all the information for 2 years for Israelis. We'll be your guinea pigs. We'll be your test subjects. Because 2 years is how long the trial should have run if it was a real trial. And so what do you see? You see I saw this article over the weekend everywhere, on every site. 90-year-old Belgian woman dies after contracting two coronavirus variants at the same time. Why is this news? A 90-year-old woman died. You could say a 90-year-old woman died because she fell out of her chair. She is 10 years plus beyond life expectancy. Why is this an issue? Yes, it is a tragedy for this lady, but why is this a story that is being curated carefully by all the mainstream media? There's Forbes. I'm reading this from RT. It's on Drudge. Every mainstream media has picked up the story. I don't even know if it's true. How do we even know that she had these variants? It could have been a coincidence, couldn't it? That's what they say when people are damaged with vaccines. Isn't it interesting that everybody will focus on a 90-year-old Belgian woman who allegedly dies from getting two coronavirus variants at the same time? Be afraid. Be very afraid. It killed a 90-year-old woman. Pretty much anything can kill a 90-year-old woman or man. So when you look, and this story from Vaccine Impact, the cost of obeying COVID vaccine mandates, personalizing it, just as they did with this 90-year-old woman, except here's their personalization. Out of the thousands of people that died, another 2,000 who died, this last week, they jumped from 7,000 to 9,000. That's a 28% jump in just 1 week. And so they show four people. A 20-year-old pre-med student. Pull this up, Travis, and show the pictures of this. A 45-year-old mother. A 35-year-old journalist. It's on vaccineimpact.com. 35-year-old journalist, dead. A 64-year-old father, dead, right? You need to personalize this. That's what the other side is doing. That's why it's so important to see this organization of people who have been injured. And there's the four people there. That's why it's so important to show the personal stories of these and the personal tragedies of these people who have been killed by this Trump vaccine being pushed by both the Republicans and the Democrats. Everybody bows to, I'm not anti-vaccine, please. The vaccines are great, but you know, maybe we ought to have a chance to make a decision. That's the best you can get from anybody, including the Republicans. Just take one of these. The 45-year-old. And again, a 20-year-old pre-med student, a 45-year-old mother, a 35-year-old journalist, the three women, and a 64-year-old father. But no, they're not going to talk about any of those people or any of the other 2,000 people that died this week from the vaccine. They'll talk about a 90-year-old woman who they believe died because she got some variants. So Robin Spring Saunders, 45-year-old Baltimore woman, gets the mandatory mRNA injection for employment. The amazing thing is that she wrote on social media, I never thought I'd get a COVID shot. But I got my first one today. Unfortunately, my job requires it. She went to work for Johns Hopkins, the people who've been at the epicenter of this stuff going all the way back to the first dark winter in 2001. It was a condition of employment. She didn't like it, but she got it, and within a couple of days, she was dead. The adverse effects were almost immediate, said her cousin, wrote on Sunday morning. She was experiencing life-threatening reactions immediately, put on a ventilator, suffered from brain and heart diseases, and was dead in a couple of days. And so this week, as I said, the CDC has added over 2,000 deaths associated with COVID-19 shots in just 1 week. And the number of miscarriages, that is, the number of unborn babies who died, is now getting close to 1,000. 1,000. It jumped from 6,985 deaths to 9,048 in just 1 week. And as Vaccine Impact points out, these are not even the true numbers, as the CDC selectively chooses what to release to the public each week. And, of course, many deaths and injuries go unreported because the public is conditioned to believe that none of these deaths, none of these injuries has anything to do with the COVID-19 shots. If you've got a 90-year-old who dies, it's definitely COVID. But if you have healthy young people who are getting heart attacks, who are getting blood clots, who are dying, it has nothing to do with the vaccine. It has nothing. It's just a coincidence that all this stuff happened immediately after they got the vaccine. Immediately after they got the vaccine. We're not even looking at the typical profile of vaccination injuries, which take more than a year to show up. The previous outing of Fauci and Slowey with the 2009 H1N1 swine flu epidemic and the vaccine that they rushed to market then, Pandemrix. That is the best documented until now, the best documented case of adverse effects because it started showing up in children within a year. These things are showing up within 24 to 48 hours, and we're pretending that it doesn't happen. Absolutely amazing. You know, I had, as we look at one of these, girl's family, who this is VAERS ID 1320319. The write-up says a girl's family who got vaccinated died along with their dog due to having been exposed to members who got vaccinated. Now, when I saw that, that stuck out to me specifically because I had a whistleblower who contacted me last year, believed that he had been poisoned. Because of what he was involved in. And his dog got sick at the same time. And both of them had blood clots. It killed his dog. It nearly killed him. Now, that was before all of this vaccine stuff. Well before all of that. He wasn't around anybody to get anything from COVID or any of this other stuff. And neither was his dog. And so when I see this about the family getting vaccinated and it shedding and getting their dog as well. It made me think about this. And I just have to say, you know, the statements that you look at, what has happened to Trump over the last year and the clueless people at CPAC this weekend, 70% of them still following this Pied Piper. Do you not understand that this is not a mistake? Do you understand this man at the very most charitable explanation for what happened last year with President Trump was that he was an ineffective fool. He was completely pwned and owned. I get people, well, you know, he was lied to by Fauci and he was deceived by these people. It's like, okay, so you're telling me that he's an absolute fool, that he couldn't figure it out then and he still hasn't figured it out at this point. You figured it out. But Trump can't figure it out, right? He still hasn't figured it out. So you want to tell me that he's a completely useless fool. Okay, fine. That's the best case scenario for what happened. I'm telling you, that's not what happened. And I'm telling you that these vaccines are not unintended consequences. And you better wake up. You better wake up to this. The CDC is reporting 4,686 what they call breakthrough cases that resulted in death and hospitalization. So you can add that to the people who have died because of the adverse effects. We got more than 9,000 people reportedly dying because of the vaccine. Another 4,700 dying, and this is just the U.S. It's much more in the U.K. It's much more in Europe, and the European database only includes half of the countries in Europe. But here, let's just talk about the U.S. and CDC. 9,000 plus another, let's call it 4,500, but it's 4,686. Okay, so those are people who died or were hospitalized. They don't count the people who get the vaccine and who get sick. They can be extremely sick. As long as they don't die, as long as they don't go in the hospital, they're not going out and testing these people who got the vaccine to see if they're getting, if they're testing positive without any symptoms. They're not even looking at them, as I pointed out months ago, they're not even looking at them to see if they are deathly ill. As long as they don't go in the hospital and as long as they don't die, they don't add them to their account. But they've had now 4,700 of those people, plus a dog, plus a dog. The Tennessee Department of Health alone says that their number of quote-unquote breakthrough cases are 140 hospitalizations and 20 deaths in the state of people who had the COVID vaccine and got sick. In spite of it or because of it? That's it for the news today. Thank you for joining us. And again, we will be doing this till further notice. We'll be going back to our old format of the podcast. Make sure that you take a look at thedavidknightshow.com. That's where you'll find the links to where the broadcast archives are, video as well as audio podcast, how you can support the program here, because this program is funded solely by your voluntary support. And if you feel that the broadcast is worth the information that I provide here, that we provide, then please support us, because if it's not worth a cup of coffee to you, then I guess there's no point in us being here. If we had people contribute that much, it would be more than we would need. And but unfortunately, we don't have, most of the people who listen don't pay for what is there. We're not going to make it. There's no intention to put this behind a paywall because I want this information to get out to people. We're at a very dangerous point in time right now. The threats to our lives, the threats to our liberty, the threats to our the spiritual threats to all of us are very elevated at this point in time. I want this information to get out. I'm not just doing this as a job, but we still have to make a living. So we really do appreciate the people who have stood by us and supported us. We have a few people who are tremendous supporters, and the vast majority of people don't. But if you could support us, you'll find the links to Subscribestar as well as to Zelle and Bitcoin, and even a P.O. box if you would like to support what we do here. You'll find all of that at thedavidknightshow.com, as well as links to the live broadcast, the video channels, and the audio podcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.